Show.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, and welcome to this midweek edition of Head On. I am Bob Kincaid. Middle of the week, downhill to Friday. Front end of a, or tail end of a foreshortened week. We will be hitting the road tomorrow, heading to Washington, D.C. The whole fam damily and I, headed for Power Shift. Agnes, me, Ferg, Margie, Doodle, all of us, part of the Coal River Mountain Watch contingent. At Power Shift 09 in D.C. It should be quite exciting. I'm still waiting to see if we're going to, what we're going to be doing broadcast-wise. And it's one of those things that I guess you wind up figuring out on the fly. That's the nature of the way we work these days. So, not sure about a Friday show. I'm certain there won't be a show tomorrow evening because it's a travel day. But I don't, you know, you never know. Tune in, check it out. If I'm not here, I'm not here. I will be contacting Ben Birch to please take over the stream in my absence. And well, I hope we'll talk. Depends on how tech stuff just works out. It's just how it is. At any rate, that's the plan. And it is, of course, like I said, Wednesday. But you know, Wednesday in the rest of the world is just another day. Just middle of the week, just downhill to Friday. Hump day, but not here. No, not here. Here, Wednesday is something special. Wednesday is when we get into our theological mindset. Wednesday is, in fact, brethren and sister in prayer meeting. Mr. Choirmaster, if you please.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen. Let me hear you say, praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praising for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, he's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs. And soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD. Just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches.
Sing it!
Thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Yeah! Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, glory, glory, hallelujah. Welcome to this Wednesday evening prayer meeting, brethren and sisters. Come on down the beloved red carpet of the Cathedral of Common Sense. I am Bishop Bob Kincaid. We are here We are here to feel the healing rays of reason flowing through us as we put our hands upon the subwoofers here at the altar in the cathedral. Bring your stories of religious intolerance. Bring your stories of the freakishness of the right-wing religion industry. Bring it all right here. Because this, brethren and sistren, is prayer meeting. Shanamastia! Hoin la shibada! I love you. Yes. Amen. And amen. You know what? This is an odd one. I got a good religion story for tonight. I got a good religion story. A religion getting it right story. That fits nicely into the as a sort of prelude to the trip we're going to take. This from a story provided me kindly by News Ninja Gene, who gets up every morning and reads the entire internet. From The Guardian in the UK, you know, journalism. Headline: Bishops of Liverpool and London call for carbon fast during Lent. Wow! The UK's Energy and Climate Change Minister, Ed Miliband, has joined church leaders by calling for a carbon fast this Lent, along with the Right Reverend James Jones, Bishop of Liverpool, and the Right Reverend Dr. Richard Chart, Bishop of London. Miliband is encouraging the British public to cut their carbon footprints during the 40-day fast by taking steps like removing a light bulb at home. He says this initiative shows there are ways we can make a difference that might seem like a sacrifice to begin with, but can easily become part of everyday life and help tackle dangerous climate change. There you go. Read about a fascinating group yesterday that's going to be part of PowerShift, an organization called Reverb. And they are dedicated to greening concert events and cutting back on the carbon footprint of touring musicians. And they've had some fabulous successes. This is all that, as I've said before, we're not talking, you know, okay, sacrifice, yeah, all right, but all we're talking about is re-energizing the reverence that we have for those who went before us and learning a little bit from their ways. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. If it is broke, fix it. If it can be fixed, don't just throw it out and go buy a new one. A whole bunch of eliminating a lot of our carbon footprint could be just simply based on stepping back and pulling out of the consumerist religion. You know, it does. It drives me a little bit nuts that over the course of, you know, we've got a printer over here that we've had since the operation began. And since we've had it, I've spent more on ink than we spent on the printer. Makes me nuts. Gotta be a better way. As our pal Kate from the coast would say, get a man on that. Or if you want it solved, get a woman on that. But, you know, just something to think about. Let me just put and this is a totally different subject. Just a question. If in his rise to political prominence, Barack Hussein Obama had held himself out and told people to call him Biff Obama. Stop laughing. If he had said that hello, my name is Biff Obama, what would people have done? Knowing that his real name was Barack Hussein Obama. What would the right wing have been screaming, hopping up and down, bumping their little knuckles on the cement with their mouths hanging open, dripping, drooling, breathing through it, catching flies on? What would the right wing have done?
He's trying to hide his true Arab identity.
Hell, he came out and told us his name was Barack Hussein Obama, and they still screamed Arab.
He's a Muslim, and his mother was an atheist.
I remember it. The 2008 campaign is not that far removed from my memory. I remember it. And it would have been 1,000 times worse if he had come out and said, hello, my name is Biff Obama, and I want to tell you that we can have change in America, and we can have hope in America again. because I, Biff Obama, say so. Just asking. There would have been cries of foul. The for-profit media would have had a screaming hissy fit. And frankly, his political career probably would have gone nowhere. Because everybody would have realized that there's a fundamental character flaw involved with somebody who won't use his own name. Biff Obama, president. See? No. Why then does Bobby Jindal get a pass? That little Mr. Rogers wannabe that showed up on television last night, why does he get a pass? Why are people still calling him Bobby Jindal? You got to wonder, in the ballots in Louisiana, does his name show up as Bobby Jindal there? Because it's not, by God, his name. His name is Piyush. Piyush Jindal. And I don't know why he would be ashamed of his heritage. It's a perfectly acceptable name. Why not own it? Piyush. You know, it even almost has a Cajun flavor, doesn't it, if you say it right? Yeah, he's from up native, Hodges, Piyush Jindal. Sounds like something you might hear at a roadhouse with a little bit of that wonderful Cajun music going on. Laissez les bon temps brûler, Piyush. But no, he's Bobby. Where he got it, I don't know. But then again, sometimes, for instance, when I'm doing tech stuff with our IT professional and once and future world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold, he will have to call India to sort something out. And invariably, you get someone with an obvious accent, and they tell you their name is, well, let's see, today I was talking to some cell phone person, and he said his name was Peter. It wasn't Peter. Peter told me about Peter Godbold, told me about one time when he had to call, and the woman told him her name was Sandra. It wasn't her name. But because corporate America understands that with a certain segment of our population that is admittedly xenophobic, an odd-sounding foreign name is somehow off-putting. As a result, someone whose name is Prabhupan instead tells you on the phone that his name is Peter. Or a woman whose name is Lakshmi, a lovely name, I think, will tell you that her name is Sandra. Not necessarily because she's ashamed of her name, but because her corporate masters have told her to use that name so she won't be off-putting to the ignorant and the fearful. So, too, with Piyush Jindal. Piyush Jindal, because he's in Louisiana, has to tell people that his name's Bobby. It's Bobby. Hey, Bobby. Let's go down to the shrimp bowl. Because it doesn't work nearly as well if it's Piyush. Now, see, was that one of the single most pathetic things you have ever witnessed in your life last night? That sad little attempt to respond to the otherwise brilliant, with a couple of flaws, oratory of President Barack Obama. My favorite response to it came from MSNBC and from an exchange, a colloquy, if you will, between Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow. Bless her heart, Rachel was just precious.
Americans can do anything. Thank you for listening. God bless you. God bless Louisiana. and God bless America.
The Republican response tonight from Louisiana's Governor Bobby Jindal. Before MSNBC brings you a special edition live of Countdown and then the Rachel Maddow Show and then Hardball, let's check in with Rachel and Chris for some final thoughts on this. Rachel, a Republican invoking the lessons of Hurricane Katrina seems counterintuitive. That's just off the top of my head.
Honestly, the Republican response to Barack Obama's first State of the Union was to invoke government failure during Katrina as a model for how to move forward as a country. I know that I'm paid to talk for a living. I am incapable of doing what I'm paid to do right now.
I'm glad to know that I'm not the only one that happens to. I'm glad to know that it happens to somebody as witty and sharp as Rachel Maddow. Because it was, I was glad I wasn't on the air when it was happening last night. Because it would have just been nothing but a series of, I would have been speaking Zorbian. God only knows what I just said. I may have just issued the command for the attacking alien spacecraft to come and start eating. But that's what, that smarmy, sing-songy, kind of Mr. Rogers on PCP insanity, breathtaking. Just breathtaking. And really, what Rachel said. You got a lot of nerve talking about Katrina and calling it a success, the recovery to it. I mean, you got brass that you got to push around in a wheelbarrow when you're willing to do something like that. Merciful God. And then the business with the boat. Now, you know how my mind operates. And it is prayer meeting, so we can, it's prayer meeting night, so we can make reference to a fundy along the way here. That reference to the boat just made me want to tear at my clothing and run around naked inside this the opulent and magnificently spacious studio. That boat, because see, there were other boats. And I remember the other boats. I remember the boat from the Illinois Department of Natural Resources that was brought at breakneck speed from Illinois to Louisiana to aid in rescue efforts. And a law enforcement officer who was a fundamentalist commandeered that boat while people were drowning to go and save some frozen, damned embryos. I remember that. I don't think I'll ever forget that. And Piyush Jindal has the nerve to get up there and talk about issues relating to rescue boats and somehow try to cast a sort of apocryphal pall on the idea of safety regulations along the way. And just as Mark Levine mentioned Mount St. Helens, I too thought of that particular corner of the world when Piyush Jindal sneered and turned his nose up and said, and they want to spend money on volcano evaluation. That's silly. Really? You know, from time to time, you will hear the remarks and the thoughts via email mostly, although she calls in some of the time, from our pal Cindy, who literally sits in the shadow of Mount St. Helens, which has had a little history of blowing its top from time to time. I'm guessing that, and I'm not trying to personalize anything, but I'm guessing that for Cindy and others like her, monitoring a volcano and having a budget to do it with feels like money well spent. I'm guessing that if you live in Hawaii, on the Big Island perhaps, volcano monitoring means something to you. I think it was an episode of, it was the Hawaii episode of No Reservations, my guilty pleasure television watching affair. It comes on every Monday night. Tony Bourdain went and had dinner with a fella whose almost entire neighborhood had been wiped out by the creep of lava from an active volcano. Said he was going to stay there till he had to leave. And sure enough, as a postscript to the program, not too long after they shot it, he had to go. Because somebody who was monitoring the volcano came and told him, you gotta go. But Piyush Jindal thinks that that's a foolhardy pork barrel waste of money. Piyush Jindal thinks that railroads are stupid. Piyush Jindal thinks that anything that benefits working class people, like unemployment insurance, is just crazy communism. Piyush Jindal, if there is any justice in the world, is done. He slow roasted himself and simmered in his own juices last night, Piyush Jindal did. And they were the juices of his own hypocrisy. His own right-wing nuttery. Because America saw two faces last night, both of them non-white, which in itself was kind of refreshing. But one of them had a vision for America's future, and the other was mired in the failures of America's past. President Barack Obama sees something out there worth striving and reaching toward. Piyush Jindal simply wants to throw himself on the immolative flames of past Republican economic policy. Sad, really. I mean, the nerve of a man who says, you know, we have a saying down here in Louisiana that at any given time, half the people in the state are underwater and half the people of the state are under indictment. How, how? That ain't true no more. Yeah, it's because the half the people in the state who are underwater drowned, you heartless bastard. With any luck at all, his ambitions for the presidency, which were obviously profound, died last night. They weren't taken out and killed. He committed suicide with his political ambitions. Only 8% in one poll, only 8% of the country said they were unhappy with what Barack Obama had to say last night. Only 8%. When's the last time you heard a number like that in a context like that? This is not to say, however, that President Barack Obama's words did not have issues. I was sitting here working away when he started talking about the problems with Social Security and mentioned private retirement accounts. And I lost all control over my inner monologue as I just yelled, no, no! Because that piratization of Social Security thing, that's what George Bush wanted. And if he'd gotten his way, we wouldn't have Social Security now. It would be over. It'd be dead. No, no, no. Unacceptable. And then there were those two hateful words. Granted, the two hateful words came toward the tail end of all of President Obama's words about renewable energy. but like a steaming pile of dung in the middle of a in the middle of a salon. Clean coal crossed President Obama's lips, and I just put my forehead in my little hand, and it's no, 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 no. So slowly but surely, one way or another, we will educate President Obama. We will finally make him understand that there is no any there is no more such thing as clean coal than there is tasty arsenic or fat-free lard. It does not exist. And we will get that message out. But with the mention of clean coal last night, I was reminded that moment last night, February the 24th, 2009, that moment mentioning clean coal in that speech was a moment of tone deafness that we really, really do need to address with President Obama. It was tone deaf for a reason. Going back almost 37 years. Well, it was a rainy night 37 years ago last night. Several rainy nights. A lot of nervous folks up a holler in West Virginia. Rain had been coming, icy cold weather. A little holler called Buffalo Creek. Probably so named because it had been inhabited for so long that there was actually a memory of buffalo. There were buffalo in West Virginia once upon a time. There were elk. But Barack Obama invoking clean coal last night was a white hot wire applied deeply into a wound that is still open in this state. Because, well, tomorrow, and we won't be on the air tomorrow, so I wanted to make sure we mentioned it tonight. Tomorrow is an anniversary of sorts. A sad anniversary. Tomorrow is the anniversary of the Buffalo Creek disaster when a dirt sludge dam that only held back a few million gallons of toxic coal sludge, when that thing burst and roared down Buffalo Holler and took away 125 lives and forever scarred countless more. And with that as the backdrop, Barack Obama mentioned clean coal. See, it was that same clean coal that killed those 125 on Buffalo Creek. We have on the phone with us right now our good friend Nanette. Hey, Nanette.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Just to let folks know, I asked you to come on to talk about this a little bit because it is so well worth remembering. You were around for the Buffalo Creek disaster, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah, it sure was. Sad, sad time.
Give us a little bit of background. What were you doing? What was your life like? That kind of thing.
Well, just a quiet life, but it had been raining hard for days. And, you didn't have instant news back then either, you know. But, you know, when the evening news came on, they started giving, you know, a little bit about it and all that, you know. But, you know, Paul's people all came from Logan County at that way. And, we started listening and paying more attention, and come to find out it was the most god-awful thing it ever was, you know. 4,000 houses in that hollow was just gone, you know. Over 100 people was killed. 125, wasn't it, killed?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And 1,100 hurt. 7 people they never found. And at the cemetery where Paul's grandparents is buried, right across the road at Peck Mill, there's a monument there. And there's little babies buried there that nobody ever claimed.
Oh, God.
They found them. And they buried them in a little mass grave there. And there's a cross there in memory of them. But that dam that broke was only about 60 feet high, and it held back about 5 million gallons of sludge. And it did that much damage.
Compare that with the dam that's over top of Marsh Fork Elementary, if you would.
Well, that dam, that'll be as high as in the River Gorge Bridge when we're done with it. Compare that with 60 feet.
And that was, five million. Yeah.
Yeah, you take 5 million gallons compared to the billions of gallons in the one up the river. So it just, you know, it just, it's, and these dams are everywhere.
Yeah, 14 of them in Boone County alone.
Yeah, there's one. You know, the picture I sent you of the falls.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right above it, we called it Crooked Run. Of course, Massey renamed it Jack's Branch. There's a sludge dam up there that holds a couple billion gallons, right above where that falls is.
And, I mean, have they changed their practices any from then to now? I mean, they're still dirt dams, right?
They're just, yeah, dirt dams. The one up there above the falls, there's leaks all over it. We walked that dam a few years back. And it just seeping water out all over the place. Well, they know that, of course, you know, people's not familiar with this area. But if that dam goes, the whole town of Petonet will be gone. It'll go down the Coal River, clear down to Dartmouth. That's down at around Ashford, down that way.
Okay.
Wiping out everything in its path. So, and then the huge ones up the river. I mean, they're all over the place now.
Well, yeah, Matt Norpell was telling me, Nanette, that the dam at the Brushy Fork impoundment,
yeah,
is the biggest, and it blew my mind when he told me, and I mentioned it several times here. I hope people aren't getting tired of hearing it. It's the biggest dam in the Western Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made out of mud?
Mud. Mud and coal gob.
And that's supposed to be safe how?
It's not. It can't be. Everything man has built has fallen.
Yes.
I mean, think about it.
Yeah, well,
the lifespan of a normal dam, a normal bridge, is what, 40 or 50 years? These things have been sitting there for years and years, and they just keep adding stuff to it and adding stuff to it. So, I don't know. But then you stop and you think back at when Pittston had that mine at Buffalo Creek. I think they paid $250 of a $1.3 million fine. Arch Moore saw to that.
Right.
Which is Shelley Moore Capito's father, for you all that know who Shelley Moore Capito is.
Exactly. The lone Republican member of the
rectum that ever was born.
Well, she's Arch Moore in a cheap wig.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about her daddy.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He was awful.
Well, I had to read the story mm-hmm. in school when I was at WVU.
Oh, okay.
And the stuff I learned, you know, just from that book, you know, how Arch Moore, the minute he heard about it, ran to the microphones to holler, "Well, this is an act of God."
Well, he also banned journalists from going up there so they wouldn't misrepresent the facts.
Right. Wouldn't misrepresent them dead bodies.
Oh, right, yeah. And all the destruction. It was horrible, you know?
I mean, they were hauling, I think you told me, that they were hauling caskets out on flatbed trucks stacked up like...
Now, the house here. See, this used to be U.S. 119 before they built the quarters, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Everything had to go through here to get to Logan County. and there was flatbed biscuits strapped on those flatbed trucks heading to Buffalo Creek. Then you had all the National Guard vehicles going by. And it was like it was a never-ending stream, you know.
And so, in essence, you know, you talk about the National Guard, and, you know, that's what the National Guard's for.
That's exactly right.
It's not for invading little countries that have never shot at us. So the National Guard was mobilized for the cleanup and so forth. And in essence, the people of West Virginia and the people of the United States wound up literally paying, for the coal company's gross, willful, wanton, reckless negligence.
Well, you know, yeah, that's true. That's the truth. And I'll tell you something else. It just like Arch Moore promised these people all these houses, all this new development and all this stuff. None of it was done.
No.
These people didn't get a thing out of that.
And you know, so the question I have to ask, and maybe it grates on some people, Nanette, because, you know, Joe Manchin's a Democrat and Arch Moore was a bad Republican. What's the difference?
Manchin's not a Democrat.
Well, what's the difference between the two? They both sat there and... coal's the only thing that West Virginia has. We'll never have nothing but coal, and we got to do the coal company's bidding. What's the difference between them?
There's no difference in them. I don't think they're coal-crats.
Yeah, there you go.
Coal-crats.
Coalicans and coalocrats.
Yeah, they're not. They don't adhere to any certain like we do. We're Democrats. We adhere to a certain mindset. They don't. They think the coal, they do coal's bidding. I don't care when you go in that Capitol during the legislative sessions, you see heated, guys running around with these briefcases going in the legislators' door or office and closing the door. You know what they're doing. You go there long enough, you know what they're doing.
They wouldn't be buying them a government, would they?
They've already bought it.
Oh, they're just making sure they stay. They're just making sure it stays bought.
Yeah. Mhm. That's my opinion. I've been there a lot.
Yeah. Well, you've been to the dance. And
I've been to the Gold Dome cesspool, as Daddy called it. More times than I care to count. That's what Daddy called it. He called it a Gold Dome cesspool.
But, you know, you mentioned that, you know, it's 37 years, and what was promised was not done for those for the people who lived up Buffalo Creek Holler.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we're still being told the same. We're still being given, well, you know, we just remove a few more mountains, and one of these days we're going to have all kinds of commercial activity up on top of that flat land. Flat land's hard to find in West Virginia. Need a lot of flat land here. We're going to have an economic miracle if we just blow up the rest of the mountains. 37 years from now, it's going to be like 37 years from Buffalo Creek. Ain't nothing there.
No. It's pitiful. It really is. But it was just the thoughts that there was a little fella lost his parents, and the lady and her husband lived down the road from us. It was his aunt and uncle, and to live with them, they raised him. And I mean, it was just all around. You know, everybody knew somebody or knew of somebody that knew somebody that was in that. You know, it was just a mess. And if you'd ever get on the internet and just look it up. And look at the pictures. Oh, yeah, the pictures in there, the railroad tracks was wrapped around trees. The rails.
Dear Lord.
Yeah, that's the force of 5 million gallons of sludge.
God almighty, Nanette, what would the force of
billions
5
gallons?
Billion be?
It would be... Well, we'd be in L.A. to clear down here. But, you know, down here where we are, we'd be tore out, too. And those Brushy Fork and all those are up in Raleigh County.
Yeah. And, I mean, just to give people an idea of the distance, how far? I mean, like, how far, say, from the sludge dam above Marsh Fork Elementary to you, Nanette?
To me?
Yeah.
probably about 32 miles down the river. But the valleys are so narrow.
Sure. It's like
no place for it to spread out and go.
Right. It's like the neck of a funnel. It just shoot through.
And it'll go clear down to it hits tornado and goes into the Kanawha River.
And at that point you're talking about 75 miles.
Yeah, at least.
And inundate everything in its path. And knowing this, that's why I wanted to take a moment to talk about Buffalo Creek tonight with you, Nanette. 37 years.
Yeah.
37 years of rock solid, foreseeable, concrete knowledge of what this stuff does, and it's still being permitted. And on top of it all, and I learned about this via, there were some more arrests today above the Shoemate Dam on up at Edwight.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mike Rozelle and another individual, a photographer, were arrested. Protesting that they're blasting near that dam.
See, that's what they were doing at Buffalo Creek. They were strip mining back behind that dam. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were doing that. They were strip mining. Pittston was strip mining behind that dam. Of course, they wasn't mountaintop removal, but strip mining, they still blast. But they were doing that behind the Buffalo Creek dam. And what people failed to realize, they had a series of three dams. All three of them failed.
At the same time.
Yep. But the biggest one, like I said, was 60 feet tall. That's peanuts. I mean, that's nothing compared to what they have out there now.
And yet, whoever it is, whether it's Joe Manchin or whoever comes after, will run to the microphone, act God.
Mm-hmm.
And see, the other story out of Buffalo Creek that people don't know, you mentioned the name of the coal company, Pittston. Okay.
Yeah.
But Pittston was, and people who don't know the industry maybe don't have as full a comprehension, Nanette. Pittston or Consol or Massey or Peabody or Arch or any of these are all the overlord corporate entities, I guess is the best way to put it. But the dam that failed on Buffalo Creek was not Pittston. It was some little shell subsidiary company. So that what happened was, when they started trying to get into the legalities of it, the people representing those who had been maimed and killed and injured and ruined and tormented by the coal company, they had to jump through legal hoops that were 8 feet high and 50 feet long just to get at Pittston, because the whole thing is a shell game.
Yes, it is.
And then they do that. Well, for instance, what is it? Goals Coal.
Yeah.
Independence. I love the way they name these. Patriot.
Yeah.
These are all.
You've got White Castle. You've got, let me think. You got Legs Air. You got Legs Erd. You got Ravencrest. You got Hollow Mountain. You've got now all these are just around my house.
And
all these companies.
And they're all owned by Massey. Or most all of them.
Yeah, some of them's owned by Arch, I think.
Right, but if you were to try to go and sue one of them for something that was done to you, we don't have any money. We're broke.
Well, not only that, if Independence does something, their parent company is Massey. You can sue Independence, but you can't touch Massey.
Right, without doing something called piercing the corporate veil, which is rather difficult to do.
So, it just, I don't know. But I tell you what, we had a hearing. They was wanting to enlarge the dam up here on Draldy. And we went to the hearing, and we had walked the dam, and we marked everything that we saw. They had, ammonia tank.
Yeah.
They just had the stuff running out on the ground. The danger sign had been thrown over in the weeds. Well, you know what happens if you get in that. That was to treat the water that went into Draughty Creek, supposedly.
Right.
Well, whenever we had the meeting and we got up and we told them everything we saw, buddy, as soon as that meeting was over, the executives or the engineers or whoever they were from Massey, and Wojtek, which was with the DEP, they made a beeline out to their vehicles. Well, we made a beeline to ours, and we followed them up there. They made a beeline up that hollow. And you know what? When we went back up there, they took a bulldozer and refaced it again. And just like I told Wojtek, I said, you know what? You can take the ugliest old woman that ever was and put big gobs of makeup on her and hide the creek. Cracks and wrinkles in her face, but those cracks and wrinkles are still there.
Yeah, and the makeup washes away sooner or later.
That's exactly right. And all they did was smooth that. They was cracks in that dam up there on Roddy that you could set a car in.
Mercy.
And they just took a bulldozer and just smoothed it all out real pretty, you know. And I said, yeah, you can put makeup on the on something, but it's going to come off. That damage is still there.
Is there anything to indicate that the coal industry learned anything from Buffalo Creek, Nanette?
No. No. They just learned how to be more efficient at getting at the agencies that's supposed to be watching them. They become more efficient in buying the officials. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They learned the system real quick.
And they learned how to make the dams a lot bigger. Not safer.
Do what? I couldn't hear you. Paul was talking to me.
No, I was trying to pick up what Paul was saying, too. I just said they learned how to make the dams bigger, but not a darn bit safer.
No, not a bit safer.
And see, the other backstory behind Buffalo Creek, if I understand correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that people had been telling the coal company for a long time beforehand that that thing wasn't safe.
Exactly, and I'll tell you another thing that people don't know. There was two county deputy sheriffs that was up in there, and they wanted to start evacuating people out of there, and Pittston run them off. The coal company run them off.
The deputy sheriffs?
Yeah.
Sheriff's badge, gun, car, got run off by the coal company.
Mm-hmm.
Because the coal company in West Virginia can run off a law enforcement officer, right?
They think they can. I tell you what, when the fellow up here on Draldy is on, that's another thing. So many of these men that live on this river know the old work. They know the old mines. They know the old pony mines. Okay? Up there underneath where they was wanting to enlarge the dam up on Draldy, Paul's uncle owned a mine, an underground mine up there. And Paul was in there when he was a little boy. You can't put that over top of that mine. He said, there's no underground mines there. Paul said, I know there is. I was in it.
So what happens when they do put the weight of all that stuff up there? What happens
Martin
to what's...
Martin County?
Martin County.
Yep.
Blowout.
Yep. Exactly. This whole place is riddled with that stuff. You wouldn't... You know,
well, the entire city of Beckley's undermined. You know, one of these days, Beckley's just going to drop into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, never mind. Coal keeps the lights on.
Yeah.
So did you watch President Obama's speech last night?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you hit the seat? Did it do the same thing to you when he uttered those two filthy little words?
Yes, it did. I thought our last hope. The courts has let us down. Everybody's let us down. And we just don't have anybody else to turn to, Bob. I mean, we've been fighting this for how many years? How many years?
And I guess the what next?
I don't know. I don't know. I was standing here at the kitchen sink looking out the window at that little road going up the side of the hill across the river in front of my house. And my great uncle had a twin brother, and they were working there when they was 9 years old. And his brother was killed in the mines. Right across in front of my house. And this plot, and he died, he was 94 years old, and he died in 1983. And I was thinking, you know what? The coal has killed generation after generation after generation of people here. And they still think that they have to have this coal, even though it's taken their lives. It took the lives of their children years ago. It's taken the lives of the men today. and that they relaxed the rules so much, the inspectors close their eyes when they go into a mine. Black lung is raging again. You know, it kind of faded out there for
right.
a while because they had precautions. They had misters and they had respirators and all this stuff. And these mines, these inspectors don't keep up with that. And these guys...
Well, eight years of taking the teeth out of the inspection process, eight years of putting crony... It doesn't happen in a vacuum, Nanette.
No.
It's 8 years of harm, 8 years of damage, it's 8 years that'll take 16 to fix.
God help us all if we last that long. That's all I can say. But when you got men in their early 30s that's dying of black lung, you think about it. You think of old men with black lung, not young men.
Well, it got my granddad.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but I do know that, you know, I just wish everybody could see and could understand what we know.
Well, and that's, you know, that's the big social question, Nanette. And maybe you've got a better answer than I do.
I doubt that.
because I can't come to one. I can't come to one that's rational or sane or anything. If you, because I know the kind of person you and people you and Paul are, all right?
Mm-hmm.
If you knew that you were doing something that was hurting, not a little bit, but putting at risk the very existence of someone somewhere else, would you keep doing it?
No. Absolutely not.
I mean, I know.
And it's just like Paul said, if he'd have known when he was a young man what he knows now, he would have never, ever stood in a coal mine. But back then, no.
And then, you know, that's just the question that I keep having to ask. When do we here start mattering to the rest of America? When does the President of the United States figure out that the coal-fired power plant in Washington, D.C. that supplies the electricity to the White House... To the lights in the room where his precious, and I'm not being a smart aleck about it, where his precious daughters live.
Yeah.
When does he figure out that what's providing the light to them is killing us? And what does he do when he realizes that? Is it some sort of psychological or moral or that blinders or I don't know, Nanette. But when it becomes real for you, How do you not just recoil in horror and start working to get away from it? I mean, you and I both know you're a bigger realist than I am. We're not going to stop burning coal tomorrow.
No, we're not.
Or the day after.
We can't. There's going to have to be a transition, but by golly, that transition better start soon. It better start soon. I mean, I know, I understand. We can't quit burning coal now. We're going to have to get, it's going to take years to get off coal completely. I know that.
But if we
finally start.
Yeah, start. And that was the, you know, that was the hopeful, that was the impressive part of what President Obama said last night. That we can do this, what did he say? Within 3 years, how much did he want to increase our energy from wind, solar, geothermal? I mean, it was an impressive number.
Yeah.
And the other thing that impressed me was he said we're going to cap carbon emissions.
Cap and trade, yeah.
Well, but he didn't say trade.
Oh, he didn't?
He said cap.
Oh. Okay.
And then there was some language about, you know, within blah, blah, the economy, yada, yada, yada. I don't have the exact quote in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
But he said cap. He didn't say cap and trade.
Okay.
And there was, I guess when he said clean coal technology, I suppose that's supposed to be industry code for carbon capture and sequestration, which is just dumb.
How are they best going to stay in the ground?
Well, you know, they couldn't even keep it behind a sludge dam in Tennessee. You know, liquid, to be realistic, within an engineering parameter and and Lord knows we've got enough enough smart folks listening to the network who can correct me, it's easier to contain a solid than it is to contain a liquid.
Mm-hmm.
But it's easier to contain a liquid than it is to contain a gas.
Right.
Now, CO2, unless you pressurize it, is a gas.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going? How are you going to pump that underground and make sure it stays in one place and doesn't bubble up and kill everybody and suffocate them?
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Oh. Yeah. Tell everybody again.
Well, they had their big shindig over in Charleston, the coal operators and all that, the coal association. And they asked him about it on the news about clean coal. He said, clean coal is when you flip on your electric switch and your light comes on. I sat there and I thought, what?
You know, I don't know how...
That is the mentality of these people.
Me and Paul and others like us, I don't know how we don't go through a television a day just getting the Elvis... get me the peanut butter and banana sandwich and bring me the Elvis gun. It's time to shoot the TV again.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Just flip
the switch. It's clean. That's your clean coal.
Yeah, so it's already clean. It's all... Golly, Moses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's already clean. We don't have to do anything else.
Yeah, it's clean when it comes through your circuit. So, I mean, through your breaker box, it's clean. Just flip your switch on. Mm-hmm.
Burn all you want. We'll make more.
Yeah.
You know, because the industry said, we got 250 years of coal left.
I don't believe that.
Well, I don't either. Because the simple...
Bob, the coal that was mined back when Paul went in the mines, when they pulled, you think coal's dirty and dusty and everything. Actually, coal's pretty. Now, don't get mad at me.
No. I've seen the little statues down Hawk's Nest. It is.
No. This is different. When it come out in the big blocks, when they used to shoot coal instead of with a container, it would come out in blocks, big blocks. You could take it, and it has a grain to it, just like wood. And you find that grain, and you hit it with a hammer, it breaks open. It's solid black, and it's, you can rub your hand over it. You don't get nothing on your hands. And it looks like a rainbow. The coal today doesn't look like that. The coal today is a dirty, gray, gobby-looking mess. It's not black anymore. It's gray. They done got the gravy. Now they're after the leavings.
Yeah, now they're picking at the bones.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing.
Well, you know, that coal that you describe, I've seen it too. And it is. And you say it's like it's got a rainbow in it. Well, it's kind of like the rainbow sheen of where some motor oil's dripped on wet pavement and the sunlight hits it.
True. It does look like that. It
yeah.
does.
And
but, I mean, it's just a real and coal is real light. The lighter the coal, if you pick up a lump of coal, the lighter the coal, the better the coal. There's less ash in it. Now you pick up a lump of coal, it's like picking up a sandstone. There's no good coal left.
Well, and that's why they're going after 6-inch seams. Right.
Yeah.
Because the people who started the coal industry in West Virginia and Appalachia, they wouldn't go after us. It wasn't worth it.
Mm-hmm.
There was no saleable quality to it. But the same thing applies, and this is a larger conversation, I suppose, Nanette, but. The same thing applies to petrol, to oil, crude.
Mm-hmm. You got your dirty crude, and you got your light crude, and you got, you know.
Right, and all the good stuff is gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder to fracture. It's harder to distill. And ask any old shade tree mechanic. Let's see, what was the phrase I heard? Modern gasoline is varnishy, is what I was told. In other words, it breaks down into solids, you know, the sticky, nasty, sticky solids, a lot easier than the older stuff did.
I know what you're talking about. We got an old gas can that's like that. An old metal gas can.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, Nanette, I really appreciate you sharing some time and just sharing some background on all of this because.
Bob, I could tell you stories just one after the other, and it just. Everybody get tired of it, I'm sure. But
no, they don't. No, they don't. I know for a fact that they don't. But those stories are vital, and they have to be told, Nanette. And I'm sure Paul's got them, too.
Yeah, absolutely. See, I've got my dad's Carbide Light, where he worked in the mines.
Carbide Light. Oh, my God.
Absolutely. I've got his light. And, see, my grandfather kept the mules and the ponies shod when they had them in the mines. And that was Dad's job. He'd take them to the creek and wash them down.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So, if you'd sit down, that was the weekend, like on Sunday afternoons. Like I said, pull your children close and tell them everything you know. Tell them history. Teach them. Let them know. So, you know, that's how I knew a lot of these stories. You know, I listened. I paid attention.
Well, I tell you what, as they occur to you, Nanette, I hope you will just sort of chime in any time and share them. Because, you know, it's interesting. They say this, the scientists or the anthropologists or whatever say that, you know, literate societies mostly have a technological edge on pre-literate or illiterate societies. But the one thing they lose is the ability to maintain oral histories. It literally affects the memory.
It dehumanizes people.
And you know, a lot of stories got passed along.
Mm-hmm.
But they also, but more were forgotten than were remembered.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
And remembering, and because I know from previous conversations, your family did the same thing that many of mine did, actively involved in trying to bring some human dignity to being working folks.
Mm-hmm.
Those stories have got to be maintained because to fail to remember those stories is to guarantee that we'll lose everything that those generations fought for.
I know.
Some of it we've already lost.
I know that, too. See, my grandpa Riggs was in the Battle of Blair Mountain. Uncle Irie, the one I told you that his little brother, twin brother, was killed over here, behind the house here, there's an old pigsty. And the men would gather up there, and they'd have their little union meeting up there. Right down here at the end of my driveway, where it joins onto the road, the mine thugs was waiting on them when they come off the hill. And they had a gun battle right out here at the end of my driveway.
Golly, Ned. And those...
Cold River's got a history, buddy.
Well, yeah, Southern West Virginia. I mean, the gun battles, there were a lot of gun battles. And I tell you what, the other night when the lady at our community meeting recounted that story of Mother Jones saying that she thought, you know, she said, when I get to heaven, I'll tell God Almighty about West Virginia. And, mm-hmm. and when she took a beat and said, I think Mother Jones went to hell because nothing's changed.
Oh, dear.
It set the room on its ear.
Mm-hmm.
But it's true. There were gun battles up and down all those river valleys. The New River, there were, you know, New River, it was the New River Mine Wars, when Mother Jones was there about 1907 and was called the most dangerous woman in America. And of course, it was, you know, corporate coal thugs that called her that.
Well, you know, my Uncle Irie that I told you was in this mine battle here, he lived at Thurman for years. He worked the mines at Thurman for years.
Well, that was the heart and soul of it.
Yeah, it was. And he ended up Clear Fork Clear Creek up in Raleigh County.
Yep.
But you know, Paul said when he went underground, he took all the danger on himself. These guys that do these mountaintop removal mines and strip mines, they put whole communities at risk.
Yes, they do.
The old miners say they took the risk on their own back. They didn't endanger babies and old people and everybody else the way that the guys today do.
Or put entire communities at an end.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't call them miners any more than I do there.
No,
I just call them
experts.
Yeah, I just call them mountain removers.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's for sure.
Well, I appreciate everything you've shared, Nanette, and
oh yeah, Paul Anthony Timmermeyer, one of the meetings we went to.
Mm-hmm. Former head of the West Virginia DEP.
That's a slammy building up at Whitesville. He said, you know, at these mountaintop removal sites, miners have to get with, you know, 1,500 feet away from the zone that they're going to blast. But you, they can blast within 100 feet of your house. Under the law.
Jiminy. Breathtaking. Just breathtaking.
It's absolutely.
Well, Nanette, thank you very much, and we will talk soon.
Huh?
I said we will talk soon and hear more stories. Jot them down. Share with, I don't know. Maybe we'll find a, we'll do Nanette story night or something once in a while.
Okay.
Lord knows it'd be a lot more engaging and entertaining than that little freak from Louisiana who babbled away last night.
Peeuge and doll.
Yeah, Peeuge.
Oh, Lord, he's a pitiful looking soul, isn't he?
I just wanted to give him a cheeseburger. I did. Eat something, son.
Oh, yeah. My God. Oh, Lord.
Well, you take care, Nanette, and tell Paul I said goodnight.
Okay, I surely will. You take care.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
Reality. A reality check from the Coal River Valley. That's our buddy Nanette, and in the background, her irrepressible husband, Paul. Okay, well, I'm not going to stop for the moment. Let's keep things rolling. We got a bunch of lines lit up. A couple of them open if you want to join in. And maybe more open than what I thought. Guys? Hey, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's up?
Well, my question is, what planet was that? Is Governor General living on? I'm curious because I sent you an email. And like I say, I think he took one of George W.'s old speeches from 2-3 years ago and just took out all the and the places where he takes the breath to smirk. Because I'm sitting there going, okay, let's see, you want deregulation. It's like, well, gee, isn't that what got us into all this trouble? And then he wanted, what is he wants more tax cuts for the rich. I'm like, you know, we're still waiting on that money to come in that those were the last 8 years of them were supposed to have earned. You know, and then here he is saying, you know, about the Katrina thing, saying government can't do anything. And I'm sitting there going, no, Republican government can't do anything. I said, you know, amazingly enough, this thing called FEMA worked when a Democrat was in charge of it. And then we turn around and this thing about volcanoes. I was sitting here watching David Schuster while I was on hold. And he said, you know what, Governor Jindal said, isn't it amazing how just a couple weeks ago you got a whole bunch of money for hurricane watching and tornadoes since you live there on the coast. Now, you and me, we live in the mountains. What do we need paying for hurricane predictions?
Well, there you go.
You know, so...
Well, and what that does is that opens up the fundamental question of are we a nation or not?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, say, there's, was it Hawaii, Alaska, is it Oregon, I assume Washington, up where Yellowstone area is. There's a lot of volcanic activity in our country when you get right down and start counting it up. And it's like, so, okay, so we let those people just fend for themselves. I'd say, I think we should do the same thing. If he wants that, I'm glad he's going to, like I say, be in favor of let's get rid of that hurricane watching. We don't need those satellites up there to tell us when storms coming in, do we?
There you go.
But
exactly.
It's just amazing. I was sitting there watching that thing, and I'm sitting there going, and I put there in the letter I sent to you, I said, other than at the very end, just a few places where he'd gone, and we heard us, and Sandy smirker twice. Once or twice, I'd have thought that was a George W. Smith.
Well, remember when Dim Leader would talk down to America? What you got? What this is?
Y'all don't understand.
Yeah, what y'all don't understand is this is something that's called economics, and he'd pronounce it real slow like America was a moron. Well, that was the same approach last night, wasn't it, Luke?
I mean, you know, I'm just sitting there going, you know, I've heard Jindal speak before, and he's a fairly decent speaker, you know what I mean? And I'm just sitting there, I'm just curious if they'll ever tell who wrote that speech, because whoever wrote that speech needs to change their profession. Because, I mean,
what? Who told him to deliver it like that?
Well, I mean, you're sitting there going, was somebody there counting in his earpiece? You know, keep it monotone. He was doing the Henry Kissinger method, you know. Speak very slowly and monotone so no one will pay attention to what you are saying.
They will all be asleep by the time we get to the slaughter part.
You know, I tell you what, if you want to see something right now, if you want to see who's totally in the tank for the Republicans in the press right now, I ain't even going to talk about Fox News. That's nothing. You ought to be watching Lou Dobbs. Lou is in the
Republican. Has Lou done come unglued? Is he unglued, Lou?
It's a spending frenzy. You know that's what it is? You know, it's like, woo.
Why is it it's a spending frenzy when we're doing it for working people, but it's sound economic policy when we're doing it for the guys who eat the Lark's Vomit canapes?
You know, that, like I say, that's the thing I had like last week with that guy from CNBC. It's like, well, it's right, real nice of you to complain about, you know, him wanting to spend Obama spend money to help homeowners. Where were you a couple of months ago when you all were demanding he spend money on these people called the bankers? I didn't hear you out there crying and screaming then. Oh, one thing off topic.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have G4 on your cable?
No.
I'm sorry. Something on tonight I was going to point you at.
Oh, I wish. No, we have two dented tomato cans and a string cable.
Okay. Well, you know, there's a good movie coming out next weekend. Or no, actually, yeah, next weekend, that I'm actually going to go see it at IMAX.
Oh, really?
Watchmen.
Yeah, see, David from Maine mentioned that last night, and I am very much intrigued with that film. It looks like it's just going to be really enjoyable.
It is. It's a filmation of a graphic novel that was essentially written about 15 years ago by a fellow named Alan Moore. And it sort of remade the comic and graphic novel industry. And like I say, it's considered the best read in the last 20 years.
David from Maine last night said that Moore is the Kurt Vonnegut of the graphic novel.
Mm-hmm. He is, and the thing of it is, he doesn't really like publicity. If you ever see him, oh God, he is a. You look at him and just kind of think, boy, you need to be down there at the soup kitchen. You know, he's one of them people that sort of, as you'd say, sort of outside the mainstream, way outside the mainstream.
Not marching to the beat of a different drummer is the different drummer.
He's probably inside the drum.
Carves the different drummer's drumsticks.
True enough. But you know, back to what we were talking about. I'll just jump off subject there for a minute. But it's just amazing to sit back and watch this stuff. And like last night, it was amazing to actually watch some of the Republicans actually criticize him, because some of them just absolutely were like, "What the hell are you saying?" at Jindal.
Yeah. Well, even Fox was not impressed. But then again, Fox wants Sarah Palin. You got to remember, there's some infighting going on here. Right now, according to one article I'm looking at, Luke, it's Sarah Palin, Willard Romney, and Piyush Jindal in 2012. That's the great hope of the Republican Party.
Oh, well, like I say, hope springs eternal. I just hope they enjoy it. Just please have a good time as you exit the building. Thank you kindly. Because, like I say, if this is what they're going to be pushing for 2010, we may get some veto-proof majorities. And it's just going to be interesting to see where some of these people are falling out in the field, because, you know, there's some of these people out in the the group out in Utah that essentially says they don't care what the Republican congressional group does. They don't speak for them. You know, there's
yeah.
parts of the...
Well, and, you know, Jim yeah. Bunning, Jim Bunning's out there threatening to sue the National Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee. Oh, I want to see that happen.
Crazy meets crazy. This will be a good one. We ain't rooting for neither.
Yeah, Bunning will be out there talking about the fluoridation or something. That guy's nuts.
Oh, like I said, it'd be fun sometime. That's what we really need to do, is have a top 10. Maybe we should get Democratic Underground to do it. Who are the craziest of the Republicans, of the national Republicans out there?
Bunning's got to be on the list. Demented's on the list. And then, you know, just because they're over in the House doesn't mean you get to it. Michelle Bachmann. Marsha Blackburn. That crazy woman from your home state.
I know. Well, and the one I always like is the fella just standing in the wrong place at the wrong time. I still like Mr. Issa.
Oh, yeah. And well, if you dig around in Daryl Issa's background, he's not just crazy; he's a crook.
Uh huh.
I mean, doesn't he have a felony bust or somewhere along the way?
He had something that I think somehow it got commuted or something. That's why he was able to do. He got downgraded from a felony to a misdemeanor, or something along those lines. But like I say, when they had the whole thing, when it was the when they had the you know, get rid of Gray Davis, which Eisa ran it up and down with a flag, and it then got passed over to become governor. Oh, I tell you what, it's just one of those things. It's amazing on some of this stuff. It's like, God, it's, you know, like you say, you're just sitting there wondering every once in a while when some of these guys are talking, if the guys in the padded wagon are coming up, say, it's time to go back to the home. Time for your medication.
Exactly. Time for your Thorazine cookies.
We have a new recipe. Come on, it'll be good for you.
And everything will be happy and shiny again.
Well, like I say, that was interesting, the thing you played the thing with over and Mad Al when it came back to them.
They were totally
just sort of like, it's like, what do you say to that?
You don't even, well, that's like not working. You don't have to work. It's just, oh, my.
It makes it too dang easy. You know how that is.
Well, and see, she's got a camera in front of her, so it does make it easier. So, because she can just sit there with that stunt. That, and, you know, she is such a delightful person to watch work, too. With honest,
she had this
straightforward, kind of stunned look. Just, and it's cute, too.
Well, the thing last night was when they did the after show, they had her on and had one of her guests was Anna Marie Cox. And they both were just kind of like, you know, they didn't know which way to turn or what to say. Sort of like, you're just kind of going, I just saw somebody's career die. You know, somebody who actually, you know, at one time we would all said was a rising star in the GOP. We watched him sit there and
see, that's
how he watched him cut the circular hole at his feet.
Yeah, but the funny thing with Piyush Jindal, Luke, is we haven't even scratched the surface of weirdness.
Well, the thing of it is, like you talk about his name, is you're sitting in Louisiana, where a good portion of your populace is Cajun. Now, I'm not saying anything bad about him. I've got some friends who are Cajun, but dear Lord, some of the names they've got down there, Piyush is not a strange name in comparison.
Well, this is prayer meeting night, Luke. Dig this. This our buddy Max Blumenthal does such wonderful work. Piyush authored an article for a magazine, a Catholic magazine, after his conversion. His parents are still pissed at him for abandoning the faith that they brought over to go become a Roman Catholic and use that as a political springboard in Louisiana. Because Louisiana might, that's the same reason you get named Bobby instead of Piyush. And he just sort of picked that up along. Literally, he picked it up from the Brady Bunch. No kidding. But the other part of it is he, in order to get further, he converted to Roman Catholicism. Because, you know, that plays in Louisiana. You know, they still call their counties parishes and stuff, right? Some of the vestiges of the old Napoleonic Code and whatnot.
Well, I say there's most people don't realize it. But if you study law, you have to study a different law because almost all of Louisiana's law is based on French law.
Yeah, the Napoleonic Code.
Yeah, instead of English, like ours, most of the states are.
Yeah, it really is. It really is a different approach to things. But he wrote this article, Piyush did, called "Beating a Demon: Physical Dimensions of Spiritual Warfare."
Saw this headline. I remember it.
This guy's,
God, you're kidding.
Oh, this guy.
I thought it was an Onion headline.
No, this guy's big, bad, crazy.
He's a demon.
He's an exorcist. Yeah.
That's it.
Come out. He's earnest. He's earnest. Angely with the like anorexia or something. God, he's a creepy looking guy. But anyway. He had been in, when he was at Brown University, Luke, you're going to love this. He'd been involved with a classmate. Her name was Susan, and she had beaten skin cancer. And she also was having trouble dealing with a close friend's suicide. So he writes this article, "Beating a Demon: Physical Dimensions of Spiritual Warfare." And in it, he says that everywhere that this woman named Susan went, that she had sulfuric scents hovering over her. And he also claimed in this article that during a prayer meeting, yeah, just like tonight, that Susan collapsed and began having convulsions on the floor during the prayer. And his prayer partners gathered together on the floor holding hands and shouting, "Satan, I command you to leave this woman!" That's the guy who talked to America last night.
And this is the guy who the GOP was pinning a whole lot of hope on.
Well, look, I mean, you got a floor roller in Godzilla from Wasilla.
Oh, God.
And you got a floor roller in Piyush Jindal. One of them's Roman Catholic. The other one's Protestant fundamentalist. At that point, you've got all the bases covered. I mean, you can't.
Michael Steele standing in the center wants to start doing breakdancing.
You crazy?
Lord, I mean, you know, it's just some of this stuff. You're just kind of sitting there going, you know, it's a shameful thing. They're starting to make Rush look sane. Oh, God.
Yeah, and I mean, this guy's nuts. He goes on and he says that while Susan was possessed by a demon, Luke, that she lashed out at him and his friends, and he said, whenever I concentrated long enough to begin prayer, I felt some type of physical force distracting me. It was as if something was pushing down on my chest, making it very hard for me to breathe. I began to think that the demon would only attack me if I tried to pray or fight back, and thus I resigned myself to leaving it alone in an attempt to find peace for myself.
Oh, God.
There you go.
You know, be happy. At least they didn't try to put something, you know how some of them are on some of the exorcisms. They at least didn't try to lay something in to try to curse the demon. Force the demon out of her, of course. Oh, boy.
Yeah, remember back in the 70s, those old T-shirts, Luke, that said, I'm with stupid, and had the finger pointing?
Yep.
Maybe for here in the waning years of the first decade of the 21st century, we need T-shirts that say, I'm with Fundy.
Oh, God. You know, it's like you said a minute ago, we've got something new now we need to have made. We need to have the foam rubber bricks made. And we need to have the Elvis gun with the Nerf bullets. And
yep, and an I'm with Fundy T-shirt.
Oh, God. Yeah.
That's like the Horn Survival Pack, isn't it?
Oh, you know, I mean, it's one of those things. What needs to be in the Horn Survival Pack is a nice set of earplugs. When you're with the Fundy, put the earplugs in so you don't have to listen.
There you go. I got to tell you, I was running errands yesterday. And speaking of the Elvis gun, there's a little place that does its own ice cream. And they've got one of those frozen marble slabs where they'll mix together and put stuff in it for you and mix it all. And so I had them do a half a scoop of their peanut butter ice cream and a half a scoop of their banana ice cream and work some chunks of yellow cake into it. And I called it, I told them they need to name that the Elvis.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. I was sitting at work, and somebody said, "Do you want us to get you something that had peanut butter in it?" And I said, "I'm sorry. Problem is, right, is I'm waiting for the FDA because I'm sitting there going, I ain't eating nothing with peanut butter for the next year." After what we found out about the Peanut Corporation,
right?
I'm at the point right now. I'd be afraid to almost eat anything with peanut butter in it.
They've
been doing this for better than a year that we know of now. You know, they said, oh, yeah, fail that salmonella test. Go ahead and ship it on out. You know, it's like, you know, that's one of the ones where you're just like, just hang that guy, just be done with it, you know.
Right. You know. No, just feed him his own peanut butter. Here,
that's it. You're going to be able to buy it for the next year.
Yeah.
We ain't telling you where we're getting it from either.
Want a cracker? Hey, Luke, have yourself a good night, brother.
You too. Have a good trip.
All right, thanks. Take care. Bye now.
All right, bye.
Calling from the hills of East Tennessee, that's our buddy Luke. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, welcome yourself.
Hey, Reverbo, what's up?
Luke was hit on some good points, and so have you. It was hard to miss the incredible experience that was last night. The contrast between, I was trying to think of how to put this, and can you imagine how fortunate we all are that Barack Obama is president of the United States? And just how lucky we are that this guy, our government now, wants to pick us up and dust us off and help us up. And contrast that to these people who all they want to do is just crap on it just reject this, essentially they're just crapping on us. And I just, it's just unreal, the contrast between, I mean, this is why America is just so unbelievable. Every now and then, just think of how lucky we are. I mean, we were that close, you know, John McCain gets to be president, and that's the final nail in our coffin, folks. We're done.
See, I had that moment a couple of times last night when I'd see the shot of Obama.
Oh, the old Maverick, yeah.
And it would just, there would stand the old Mavericks. My friends, the economy is strong.
Yeah, it was. And suddenly it was weak. I thought the old Maverick last night was thinking of a number between 1 and 10 a few times.
And yet there he was. There he was at 7 o'clock this morning, up and raring to go. I guess his meds had kicked in and stuff, and he was right there to talk about it on the morning news programs. Why they weren't talking to a Democrat? I don't know. I don't know.
Well, that's another story. But I mean, you see what I'm talking about? How just we should just be how grateful we all are at this. I mean, this guy, they just don't want to dust you and I off. He even wants to help Wall Street back up on its feet, Bob. This guy wants to help General Motors back.
I know.
I mean, he wants to help, buddy. How soon can we start? And these people just are just rejecting it. And you just have to wonder, well, I had this great idea for him. See if you think this is, I know this sounds crazy, but it just might work. Well, first of all, I'm going to give you three names, and I want you to tell me who these guys are. Where do you think they're from? And their names are Bobby, Sonny, and Haley.
Yeah, no brainer.
I'll bet you know.
Yeah, they're not from Maine and New Hampshire.
No, and they also aren't anywhere near any brains either.
No.
But here's my idea, and I don't know, maybe they're thinking about it. Picture this. Picture these guys cooking up ideas where they secede. They think that they actually secede from the United States. They get all their buddies, their Republican buddies from all their poor southern states, and they literally secede from the Union. What do you think? It just might work, don't you think?
It could work.
God, I'm going to have to email these guys.
Yeah, well, look, yeah, let's keep the geography going. Rick, Bobby, Haley, Bob,
Matt,
Sonny,
Bunny.
There you go. Yeah, wow. Wow.
I'm telling you, it's lining up just for the big showdown here. And maybe you could just secede just based on like political lines, right?
Yeah, but how do you
Republicans could just secede. They don't want the money. They don't want any help. They just want to just go ahead and slowly just.
Well, no, they want. That's the thing, though. That's the depth of the hypocrisy, Reverbo. It's not that they don't want the money. They just want the money they want. I mean, with Piyush Jindal, he wants the money he wants. I mean, he wants money for roads and bridges as long as he makes sure that he doesn't have to pay a living wage to have them built. And he damn sure doesn't want any money that would help people who are out of work. Because, see, the right-wing view is that if you give money to somebody who's out of work, he'll never look for work again.
Well, by God, we don't want the federal government telling us states what to do, do we, Bob?
No, we don't. We got some states' rights.
Damn right. We're a bunch of dumbass southern Republicans. We don't want the federal government telling us how to run things down here. You know, I don't know how to tell this to Bobby or Perouche here, but he ain't calling the shots.
No.
I don't know if they noticed this or not, but there was like this total rejection of their agenda. There was a total rejection of them, I believe, what's this, February, November, December?
Yeah, about 4 months ago.
Yeah, about 4 months ago. It was a pretty overwhelming approval of the progressive way and a rejection of the, well, what would that be? The regressive way, I suppose.
There you go.
Just evolution.
The dead from the neck up way.
There's de-evolution.
Yeah. They're devolvers.
They are Devo. And you know, another thing that I love about him so much. Oh, by the way, Bobby J. Did he escape from like a seventh grade public speaking camp? What was up with that guy? I mean,
I know. It was just gut. It would have been gut bustingly funny if it hadn't been delivered for real.
But think of it this way, though. He's kind of like Sarah Palin. It was delightfully awful. It couldn't have been better.
Remember the old Saturday Night Live skit that Dan Aykroyd would do from time to time? Hello, I'm Leonard Pintz-Garnell, and this is Bad Theater.
Yes, I do remember that.
Well, that's Sarah Palin, and that's Piyush Jindal, and I started using people's real names back when Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com put me on to Mitt Romney's real name.
What is Mitt Romney's real name?
Willard.
Well, yeah.
You know, conjures up all those lovely images of rats.
It does.
Yeah, Willard.
I don't know. Mitt conjures up. I don't know what that conjures up.
But we've
been hearing so much of that old Perush. We've been hearing. I mean, yeah, like Luke was saying, you guys were talking about this. This is our shining star. These are our people. These folks are the fangled Republicans who are going to attract all the moderate voter next time. You know, these are the people we're going to just hang our. We're here. We're just going to get back to the White House with these guys. And I'm just thinking, what?
I got to share this paragraph with you from the Max Blumenthal article, Reverbo. You're going to love this. Born in Baton Rouge in 1971, Jindal rarely visited his parents' homeland. His birth name was Piyush Jindal. When he was 4 years old, Piyush changed his name to Bobby. At 4 years old, he changed his name. After becoming mesmerized by an episode of the Brady Bunch. Jindal later wrote that he began considering converting to Catholicism during high school after, quote, being touched. Let's see. I've got to work it like the speech last night. Being touched by the love and simplicity of a Christian girl who dreamt of becoming a Supreme Court justice so she could stop her country from killing unborn babies.
So the first chick he made out with is what he means.
The first one didn't spit on him. Oh, we have been around the block a couple of times, haven't we, Reverbo?
Well, I mean, I've heard some stories. I just like, you know, it's like you had a great line. These people... Yeah, the erudition, and I'm just going to add to it, the erudition and the scholarship that just spews forth from these people, you just can't wait to put it up on a refrigerator door, can you? I love that.
Look at that. There's some of what little Piyush wrote the other day. Isn't that precious?
Look at that. And what was the title of that speech? Oh, yeah, it was Americans Can Do Anything. That wasn't a work in progress title, by the way. That was the title.
Yes.
I come from a faraway land, he says. Yeah, this is the same old tired patronizing Republican bullshit, only this time delightfully written and delivered by the 14-year-old king of Louisiana.
At Mardi Gras. Why not?
Yeah, at Mardi Gras. It was a joke.
Laissez les bon temps brûler, baby.
Oh, yeah, they're going to attract tons of new voters with this guy. Well, I mean, all you've been doing is hearing so much about him, and then here he is, and it's like, wait a minute, where is he? Oh, that's him. Oh.
No, really. Where's the guy that's really going to deliver the speech? This is cute and stuff, but turn off the onion. No, that's him. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's so many ways. I mean, you can, I don't know how anybody can disagree with that speech, with Obama's evaluation of things. I mean, sure, you can. Yeah, that's an incredible, no kidding, we have incredible challenges, and the time frames are possibly unrealistic. But, I mean, you know, how can you not? This guy laid the whole thing out. I mean, there's I guess I just can't quite get my brain around the idea that there's still these people who are dragging their knuckles and who either are acting like they don't get it or they really don't get it.
There's none so blind as those who will not see. Is this one of those?
I mean, is this just, sometimes you just wonder if like O'Reilly and Limbaugh and these people, if this is just an act, you know, they're just getting paid to entertain these morons, or are they really like this? I mean, how can you argue with anything Obama said last night? I mean, this guy, he wants to help everybody. He didn't leave out anyone. Well, let's see, he did leave out a few people. He left out people who don't really deserve to be in a big house. Well, he hardly left out anybody. I mean, I can't. And yeah, and these Republicans, they just decided, you know, we lost, and but we're still annoying and stupid, and so we want to make sure that we everybody, we're still here.
We got to get out there and say something. You can't just. It's well, you know, it's like the conversation between the man and his wife, and they're planning that. Well, honey, we have to go. I mean, if we didn't show up, it would seem rude. So we'll just go and stay for a little bit, you know, about a party that they don't want to attend. But we'll just go and stay for a little bit, and then we'll come home. Well, all right. That's what last night was. Well, we got to put somebody out there. He's showing promise. He was so crazy. He said he didn't want money for people who are out of work in a state that's already been wrecked by a hurricane. Yeah, let's.
Conditions don't seem like a big deal to me.
Let's give it to Bobby. He'll say the speech. He'll say anything. Hey, Bobby.
Say anything. Yeah, he wants to be president one day. Here, Bobby. Oh, God. I mean, these conditions that they're objecting to, again, I think they should just secede. I think we should have the Second Civil War or something. I mean, yeah, we certainly wouldn't want to, you know, help the people of our state who needed help, if that meant we had to help more of them.
Well, you know, we had the Civil War 140-some, 50-some-odd years ago. Maybe now we just have in our enlightened state, maybe we just declare irreconcilable differences and have done. But damn, I hate for them to get the Gulf Coast, because I like it so much down there.
Yeah, you had to go mention that Cajun grilled oysters last week. I could just about reach through the phone.
Oh, Reverbo, if you ever
what
get
it. What are you doing? You're driving everyone insane with this.
And well, what they do, I mean, it's just a great little local.
No. You don't have to. Really, you don't.
I mean, they're shucked and they're open and they put them on the grill. And
oh, God.
And then they put the Cajun spices to them. And they bring them to you, and they're still like an oyster on the half shell, but they're kind of roasted. So they're hot, and they're yummy, and they're wonderful all at the same time. Oh, mercy.
Oh, God. Well, we'll just have to figure out.
Cajun's restaurant.
Oh.
Sheffield, Alabama. There you go.
Yeah, why don't you take a picture of it and post the picture for us all to see.
You know what? Next time I'm down there, I will go because you know my kids have never had those. We'll go and I'll take pictures and we'll put them up on the website. They're magnificent, and you know they have their oysters flown in every day. It's wonderful. Oh, they're good. The big old long neck beer. Oh.
I don't know. Wouldn't you go ahead and we can figure out the food? That maybe that's just a detail. We can deal with those recipes later. But wouldn't you give them South Carolina and we get San Francisco. Give them Mississippi, the whole state pretty much.
We get Chicago.
Yeah. You know, I think this works out fine. Maybe we'll just go ahead and let them secede, and hopefully they'll just float out into the bay. And
well, it is reminiscent of the plot that was put forward around the Civil War era that I've mentioned before. A bunch of Southern agitators floated the plan literally. They suggested that a big ditch should be dug around Massachusetts and it should be floated out to sea. So, you know, sauce for the goose.
Yeah. More ideas like this, I'm sure, will be presented as the months go on. Hey, really quick about the clean coal thing, and it was tough to. Nanette was fairly, yes, that's reality there. But I'm going to suggest something that I'm going to sing to the choir here. And I'm going to prefer to think that Barack Obama is just a freaking genius. And he's also a politician. And I think he is just, I'm going to prefer to think that he's using his powers for good and not evil. And he's just pandering. He's just, He doesn't want, the last thing he needs now is more people on his back. And I'm just hoping that he just threw out the idea of clean coal, just like he throws out a few other ideas that we don't like, just to distract them for a while. He'll get to them later.
And there, and he never said anything about nuclear power either. I mean, yeah, and I ascribe that kind of brains to the man. I really do.
Give him an hour with scientists who can describe, well, you were trying to do this for me once, the level of technology, where we are today with whatever it's called, carbon atmosphere recapture or whatever it is. You know more about this than me, and I guarantee you he will see the light. I mean, well, I'm a Japanese aviator. I mean, I can't believe that he's just not using this as just a distraction. I mean, the guy's got enough on his mind right now.
And that is what I fervently hope. That doesn't, however, give us a pass on this end, Reverbo, to quit pressing for him to recognize and know what's going on.
It does not. As a matter of fact, a good analogy to that is, did you see or hear how hard he hit healthcare last night?
Yeah, like a ton of bricks.
Oh, man, and there's just the perfect example. We've never let up talking about that on the horn ever since I started with it over a year ago. People have been hitting that. I mean, don't, you know, and just, I mean, his three topics, his energy, healthcare, and education, I thought he hit healthcare hard. I was very pleased.
And what, he did a lot of stuff right. The way he talked about education. Did you catch that, Reverbo? Did you catch the part where he said everybody's got to get some kind of college?
Yeah, I really like that. Everybody goes to college. Well, yeah, everybody goes to college, and well, here's where I now you just now I'm not going to be any fun at all. Everybody goes to college, and everybody buys American, and everybody goes back to work, except some of those ships have already sailed. It's hard to get them back into port. Everybody can go to college if you overhaul.
But it's at least the front end thinking for what comes next. I mean, we've had 8 years of look, Reverbo. Yeah, I'm sure somewhere in your travels and your life, you've known people who fell into the depths of addiction. We've had 8 years of, and you know how their brains work.
Yeah.
We've had 8 years of addict thinking. You know, no concern for consequences. No concern for the future, no regard for what the behavior is doing, not only to the addict, but to the people who love and care about the addict. It's 8 years of addictive behavior. Yeah, burn more coal, we'll dig more.
Yeah.
Send more jobs somewhere else. We'll figure out something sooner or later. How's the sales numbers from the Walmart TV department? See, America's fine.
Yeah, we got them on the knees. Now let's just knock them on their ass.
Yeah,
you're right. You're right. And I'm just being.
Well, no, but it goes to your original theme, and that is, as frustrating as it is for me when I hear those two noxious little words, or when I hear things like, because the one that I will meet you that far that mentioning clean coal was a sop. Because I like to think he'll sign off on clean coal when coal is clean, which means never. But the other one was this idea of creating private retirement accounts to bolster Social Security. Didn't we deal with this 4 years ago, Reverbo?
Yeah, it's a little scary, but let's throw that in that pile, too. He just doesn't want to mess with it. He don't want those people to leave him alone. It's much better to think at this point, given the benefit of the doubt, than to just, it's so easy for me, and I know you too, to just, it's very easy to get paranoid here. Hey, for that matter, he didn't mention the Department of Defense very much, and you know how I feel. You can't have any constructive discussion of spending or your...
Well, I mean, he did. We're going to have more soldiers and more Marines.
Well, and we're going to get rid of the old Cold War weaponry that we have. I mean, yeah, I mean, he, unless you confront the Pentagon, you can't even talk about spending. And he didn't mess with that too much. He didn't really talk about global trade policy is a whole heck of a lot. But, man, 95% of that was just right on.
It was, and it was inspiring.
And they ain't ever going to be perfect. This is the best quote.
Did you catch any of the follow-up after he was done and he was doing the rock star autograph signing? And he was
more of the beginning than the end.
He was so at ease with the crowd. At one point, he was signing an autograph. He said, you know, my signature used to be so much neater. Because, you know, he just made a big B and a line. Because that's, when you get famous enough, all you got to do is make a letter or a semblance of one.
You're saying that you watched, you got a feed where he was mic'd? You heard him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Proud?
Yeah.
Well, I was watching on CNN, and I just, it was pretty violent in the beginning. I was watching him come in and bat hand everybody, and I didn't hear any live audio really.
But I will share with you. You mentioned the P word, paranoia, a moment ago, Reverbo. I had, because of what I was doing at the time, I had my back turned to the screen parts of the time, and at one point I heard Nancy Pelosi gavel the meeting closed, but all I heard was bang, bang, bang. And I jumped out of my chair and turned around and said, some bitch better not have. Because that's that scary place that we dare not go. And it was like, because for a split second, my brain went, what the hell just happened? And I had to turn and see that he was okay. And then I heard Nancy's voice saying, this joint session is closed.
Very
God, Nancy, give a guy a break, okay?
Well, you got to don't turn away from the TV, and it's funny you should say that because when he first walked in, you can't help it, at least if you're my age. You can't get that picture of Oswald out of your mind. It's there and it won't go away. And you can't get the picture of Robert Kennedy lying on his back out of your mind. You just can't do it. And it is scary. But anyway, it was,
Okay, so I'm not nuts, right? I mean,
no,
I'm not.
No, that would be amusing if you would have had a slight heart attack because Nancy Pelosi hit the gavel.
Oh, and by the way, Nancy is going to come and talk to Power Shift, Reverbo.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go.
That'll be interesting because you know this is a lot of. I mean, there's a lot of. This isn't just about a national energy strategy. This is about powering past coal. This is about our coal-free future, and I want to. She'll be walking into a lion's den if she doesn't come in there ready to talk about a no coal future. Now, just like Nanette and I were talking about, it ain't gonna happen tomorrow or day after tomorrow. But anybody who knows that, if you look at usage rates. Okay, and this is my non-mathematical moment, okay? Some of you others much better. But if you look, the coal industry's been saying, we got 250 years of coal since 1970. All right, start with that. Then factor in increase in population, and then factor in the increase in usage. And it becomes exponential, and anybody who's ever seen a loan amortization or compounded interest understands how that works. And if they've been saying 250 years of coal since 1970 and it's 2009 and they're still saying 250 years of coal, it's probably more like 150 tops. And so while we ain't going to quit burning it tomorrow, like Nanette said, we are going to quit burning it. And we're going to quit burning it just like we're going to quit burning oil and natural gas. Either by choice, in which case we will have an opportunity to transition away from it, or we will do it by necessity when the damn stuff runs out. And look, instant apocalypse.
Is it too much to ask if we plan for that day?
See? There you go.
Well, and that's now we're talking about his all the good words about education and energy and all of that. I mean, this guy, he really cares about this country more than any president I can think of that I ever voted for. I mean, he, this guy's genuine. And I'll tell you, and I'll leave you with this. I know you and your friends are going to be prepared for her, so she had better be prepared for you. But I mean, last night when I was watching this, and I you kind of knew what to expect. because the press leaked a lot of the speech. Everybody knew what Bobby J was going to say, all the dribble coming out of his mouth ahead of time. I just didn't realize it would be so delightfully. He was such a goofball. I had no idea. But, you know, you're watching this speech, and there he is. You feel so good. President Barack Obama and these people are just, that's him, man. He's standing right there. He's up there. He's our president. And he didn't come on until 9, and I had a late dinner. And I'm a bachelor, as you know, and so I just rounded up a turkey, and I made a turkey and Swiss sandwich or something. And I'll tell you, while listening to those stirring words, I realized I would be able to summon the boldness and determination things such a snack required. I really did. And the more President Obama spoke, I felt a renewed leadership, and I knew I wouldn't quit until I consumed that sandwich capably, yet honestly. It was very personal.
Very personal.
You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I do indeed.
I knew you would.
Very well put. Indeed.
All right.
All right.
I will catch up with you down the road.
Reverbo. We know the rules.
We do.
Make it personal.
Make it personal, my friend. All right. Talk to you later.
Take care, Reverbo. Bye now.
Bye.
Critic at large, Reverbo, with his observations on last night's speech. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Pat.
Hey, Pat. How's it going?
I'm okay. I'm recovering from a bout with bronchitis. And
I've been down that road. That's nasty.
It hit me on Friday, and I'm just back to near normal now. So, but I was listening to last night's podcast. I don't know if you got the email I sent you right before the show or not.
Yes, I did. I saw that.
When you started talking about David, it really broke my heart. I was sitting in a Chinese takeout waiting for my order, and I almost started bawling there. I don't know how you do it. I really don't, because I mean I only know these people through you, and I don't really know you, but I do know you, and I don't know how we keep. I don't know how we can keep this together. I mean, it. I don't know, Bob. And this might be the fact that I sent my wife and boys away when I got sick, so that they wouldn't have to deal with a hacking, coughing daddy.
Right, and just on the odd chance that it might be contagious, or right.
Right, and also so that I would actually be able to get some rest.
True too.
And so they're down the Cape, and so it could be a week at home by myself in a big house is doing this to me as well. But just the,
I would hazard a guess, Pat, that it's not just the being alone in the big house by yourself. This stuff does impact us, and just as. You know, just as what David from South Carolina said in his posting last night, it was a matter of processing and sharing, and that's how this format is supposed to work.
Yeah, no, and I love this, Bob. I mean, how I scraped together when I was unemployed for 5 months. I scraped together $10 a month.
Yes, you did. You certainly did.
This made that much difference to me. It kept me going. This program, this network, oh God. And I don't know if it, I didn't realize that there was a State of the Union address last night, and I feel like a fool for missing it. But I was, I was sick, and I don't, that's the only excuse I have. But I get the feeling, everything I've read, I haven't gone back and tried to watch it online yet, but everything I've read, even if Obama is this super genius, I think the only way that we're going to get out of this is by accident, because I don't think that, I really don't think we, that the people that actually run things want us to get out of this. You know, I think they got more to grab, and
I think that, Pat, you're absolutely right. That's part of the process, or that's the evil half of the process. There are, and others, I think Bart Kopp reflected on it too, that what you see in a lot of these things is when ordinary people are done out of everything they have, then the people who still have things, you know, the people at the top of the food chain, come in and buy that up, and then they own more. I mean, look at the last 8 years, for heaven's sakes. It was literally the Robin Hood in reverse. It was theft. People who had next to nothing had it taken away from them and funneled to people who had more than they could count.
Right.
And then they, through their own ignorance and mismanagement and just the blood-fisted greed, screwed up what they had, and now they're coming back saying, we want more of what you got. You know, there's a, golly, what song? There's an old Grateful Dead song. I think it's Tennessee Jed. We can share the water, we can share the wine.
Oh, yeah.
What's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine. Yeah. Have I got the right song there?
I mean, that
concept, that is the top of our economic food chain. What's theirs is theirs, and what's ours is theirs. And in a moment of need or greed, they will, by God, reach out, clasp their hands around it, and yank for all they're worth. And part of what I heard last night was President Obama saying, well, he was smacking the hand, pull back. We're going to do some things for working class people. And see, in the context of the conversation with Reverbo, Pat, one thing that bears pointing out is that Bobby Jindal, or this crazy Mark Sanford in South Carolina, they don't get to treat the stimulus, as a matter of law, they don't get to treat the stimulus, to use a reference you made earlier, like the menu at a Chinese restaurant. It's not one from column A and two from column B.
Yeah.
It's you take it. You don't get to pick and choose, because one, I forget who it was, pointed out that to do otherwise, to let a Piyush Jindal say, well, we want this, but we don't want that, is to give the governors of the several states a veto that Barack Obama himself did not have.
Right.
So, I think you're wise to keep your eye open and to sort of keep your psyche on the lookout for ripoffs. Because any time the wealth of the nation is in play, and it certainly is, then there is a segment of our society that will try to steal just a little bit more because they have this unending sickness that tells them they never have enough.
Did you remember when, I don't know how long, it was when one of the bank bailout ones went through, and John Stewart was, I can't remember who he was talking to, but his suggestion for the bank bailout was to take that money and to divide it up evenly between all of the people in the country and earmark it to be paid for consumer debt, whether it's a mortgage or credit card or car payment or whatever, but that's what it was supposed to be. And that way the banks still got their money, but we also helped the people out themselves. You know, we helped us out ourselves. Do you remember?
Yes, I do. Vaguely, yes.
I think that is the most common sense idea that I don't understand why have implemented something like that. Why that would have helped everybody, you know? I mean, the banks would have got their money. We would have been, you know, David would have been able to pay his mortgage for another 2 months or something. You know, I mean, you would have been able to pay the mortgage on your father's house. You know, I could have got rid of half of the $28,000 of credit card debt I racked up. You know, I mean, it would have helped everybody. And we would have known where the money went because it would have gone to us. You know,
I know. It sort of defies reason, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, it shows you that they don't have our best interest at heart. They have whoever really is in charge, their interest at heart. I watched the other night Poisoned by Polonium, Alexander Litvinenko documentary. I don't know if you've
No, I haven't.
Do you remember the incident? It was 2 years ago, I think, or a year and a half ago.
Yes.
Where he got poisoned by Polonium 210. He was an FSB agent and living in London. The documentary, I find it hard to recommend just because it really wasn't done by a professional filmmaker. It was more done by a Russian journalist who didn't really have a film background, and so it's kind of hard to follow the flow of it. But just, I mean, that shows what's happening in the Soviet Union, and to me, you could see the resemblance between what happened in the Soviet Union in 1999 when the apartment building in Moscow got blown up.
Right.
Was, supposedly similar to what happened to us on 9/11.
Right.
But it looks like they're there's a level operating above everybody that we don't even see, and I don't want my tinfoil hat.
No. I understand.
Where is Peter?
Yeah.
I miss Peter.
But no, this is a trying to
seems like everything's operating at such a high level above. And we can't trust our media to tell us, to speak to us even intelligently or honestly. We can't trust our media to do that.
You have to ask why we can't trust our for-profit media. And the answer is in the words, for profit.
Well, and it's not only that. It's not just that they're for profit. It's because they don't stand alone. They have other interests besides their own profit.
Yes.
GE owns NBC, but they also, own a big chunk of the armament business. And, so NBC reporting really is suspect to GE's armament, or subservient to GE's armament interests. I don't know. I'm sorry, Bob.
Don't apologize.
I feel like I should sometimes make a list before I
get on. That's okay, Pat. Don't worry. Don't worry in the least. You're carrying on this conversation after battling bronchitis. You're working under a little bit of a disability.
My zip pack I'm on the last day of my Z pack there, and that stuff kills you. I don't know. Have you ever had to take that?
Oh, yeah, Zithromax? Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
It's rough.
Yeah.
But, the nice thing is it's broad spectrum, and it wipes out a lot of the stuff that ails you.
Yeah, and everything else.
Yeah, well, whenever, and this is just anecdotal, I suppose, but any time that I have to do a load of antibiotics, as soon as I'm done with it, and somebody will probably tell me, Bob, that makes it not work anymore. As soon as I'm done with it, I make sure that I have a few cartons of yogurt along the way in the weeks afterward just to try to get the flora and fauna inside my insides back to normal.
Oh, yeah. Annie made sure I had that. And actually, the last time that she had to take it, she had me pick up some acidophilus for her.
There you go.
So,
and, yeah, the sweet acidophilus milk is nice.
Was it kefir or something? Kefir?
Yeah.
Drink.
Right. But yogurt and or sweet acidophilus milk. But, you know, redneck boy that I am, you don't have to twist my arm to get me to drink a big old glass of buttermilk, and that does the same trick.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I tell you, I can't get our youngest. You know, she loves it when I make cornbread with buttermilk and pancakes with buttermilk and all that. She don't want nothing to do with so much as a sip of it. Oh, Daddy, that's nasty. Kefir or, right. Not quite the same, but in fact, David from Tennessee sent me a note. We were talking along these lines the other night, and he said, yeah, that's buttermilk is redneck keef or kef. I never do know how to correctly pronounce that.
Yeah, I don't either.
but it works.
Yeah. I felt like I've been wanting to talk to you for a while, and you know, and I had this house empty for a week, and I've had an opportunity. I just haven't felt healthy.
So have you been going to work at the same time and everything, or
no? And you know what? That's one other thing I want to say. I losing my job last August or 2 Augusts ago. Was it 2 Augusts ago already?
Yeah, amazing how it flies by, isn't it?
Losing my job, I think might have, at that point in time, might have been, like, the best thing that could have happened to me, because if it had happened now, I would really have been up, you know, the creek and without a paddle. And the place that I work now, my boss, I don't know if I've mentioned this before or not, but he lives like a quarter mile from me, and we carpool, and his wife actually works at the company. It's a small company. It's about 50 people or so, and so, you know, we're fairly close, and he's got a daughter and who gets along with my two boys, and she's about 8, but she likes playing with the boys and stuff, yeah, my boss has been, you know, he's like, take your time, come back, you know, whenever. And I was like, well, you know, I brought my laptop home, and if you got work for me to do, you know, I don't know how much I'll be able to do, but just let me know. And he's like, no, don't. That's the least of my worries. Just take it easy. Come in when you're ready.
So, well, that's downright humane for this day and age, Pat.
Yeah, yeah. I feel very lucky, and you know, the company is financially, it's very strong, and they, you know, they've been growing. You know, they had 50% growth the past 3 years, and we keep expanding, and I feel very, very lucky, and I'm not doing anything that I really have any ethical or moral issues with.
You know, you say that as sort of an aside, Pat, but one of the side effects that I'm beginning to notice via the conversations I have off air and around town and with listeners to the horn and so forth, one of the things that seems to be a side effect of some of this economic malaise, if you will, is that people are reevaluating the meaning of work. And what you just said is so very important. If you can get up and go to work and feel like you're not putting the screws to anybody by trying to keep a roof over your head and food on your table and see to your children's well-being and future, you're miles ahead of the game at that point.
Right.
And people are beginning to look at what it means. I mean, there's a certain segment of this population that never will. I don't think that because of the propaganda that they're subjected to on a daily basis, them environmentalists want your job. I don't expect a lot of introspection from somebody who's a mountain remover. I just don't. It's been my experience over the course of years that is not their strong suit. As long as they, you know, as long as they get the new pickup truck every 5 years, have a reasonably decent home away, far, far away from where they do what they do,
And as long as they can keep their kids in new Chinese crap from Walmart and have a 52-inch TV on the wall, life is good.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there are a lot of people who are that way. There are people who have good lives building bombs that we drop on the rest of the world.
Right. Well, and I mean, you know, I'm a chemist, and you know, I don't make a secret out of it. You know, I tried working in pharma. I you know, I did my time after my undergrad at a, you know, one of the larger, or you know, I think it's the largest pharmaceutical company in the country, and really did not enjoy myself, and vowed I wouldn't go back there, and I'm glad I haven't had to you know, change my mind on that, because I really don't think that the pharma's big interest is in, you know, curing people or even, you know, saving people. I think they just need to make money because they're a company.
Right, and they answer the great profit god.
Right.
And so, you know, I know during Mark's program, he took issue with some of the things that Matt Rothschild said about Obama's address, and I guess Matt Rothschild thought that Obama was too obsequious to American business. And I can get on board with some of that. But I see a valid purpose in government, paying people well to do things. Big business is notorious. Consider electricity. There you go.
Yep.
Back in the Depression era and before the Depression era, electricity did not get out to rural America, and would not have gotten out to rural America. I mean, my mother has told me stories, Pat, about her childhood when the house was powered on Delco batteries. There was no grid.
Yeah, no, my father lived in you know, Potsdam, New York. He grew up in Potsdam, New York. Went to school in a one room schoolhouse with eight grades, you know, and
right.
And he lived on a farm, and you know, I visited that farm. It's left the family, but I visited there, and I've seen it. And I totally understand the whole. And I mean, my grandfather on my mom's side, his family came from Montana, and he told me that during the Depression, that his father had to actually rustle cattle to feed the family, and they eventually made their way, I guess, to the East Coast. But so I mean, I totally know. He worked in the Civilian Conservation Corps. My grandfather did.
As did mine, or either the CCC or WPA. Not sure which. Probably the CCC. But you know, there is a validity to knowledge, and there's a validity to study and research. And so, you know, when we talk about electricity, it took the government getting. It took a piece of legislation called the Rural Electrification Act, where the government looked at the private power companies and said, okay, you say it's too expensive to take it out there to the country? That's fine. We're not in the profit business. We'll do it. And all of a sudden, oh, well, yeah, I mean, you know, the government's going to get in business. Can't have the government getting in business. It's un-American for the government to do business and compete against us. Then get out there. And the same thing applies in 2009 to broadband, Pat.
Yep.
You know, there we go again. The private ISPs that are trying to get a chokehold on the internet. You know, we haven't talked about net neutrality in a while, but that doesn't mean the issue has gone away.
Right.
But lo and behold, you know, they're there. Well, you know, it's too expensive for us to take broadband to rural America. They just need to stay on dial-up. Well, watch those attitudes change if we say that we're going to, that the government's going to, it's just going to happen. The government's going to make broadband available to rural America.
Watch them. Watch the big ISP. Wait, that's communist. That's socialist. We don't want a socialist internet. You know the drill, Pat. You've heard it before.
Yeah.
But by golly, I bet you it'll speed the increase of the reach of broadband into rural areas. And see, I mean, I'm biased, I guess is the word. I think about things like greening urban areas, and I think about. I love mass transit. I think when we're in D.C., my kids, it's going to be the whole country mouse family goes to the city, okay? I've formulated this theory. Nick Regalado and I worked it out last time we were in D.C., and I just looked at him because we felt like we were being a little bit, sort of country mouse, really, because, you know, looking around at stuff that we don't see all the time. I just looked at him and said, brother, when you are a tourist, be a tourist. And he would say the same thing to me from time to time because you catch yourself being a little self-conscious. I do this all the time. I'm cool. No, be a tourist. It's okay. And so, you know, the country mouse family is going to get on the metro in D.C. and we're all, Agnes, me, all three of the kids, just going to be standing there with our mouths hanging and going, dang. Because it's neat to see these things that can happen. You know, the D.C. Metro, the New York subway, the L in Chicago, all of these things, you know, all these things are manifestations, Pat, of public will.
Yeah.
Of us working together to make things better for everyone. And so I get a little disturbed, or not disturbed, but I'm excited to see this stuff being talked about for urban areas of America. But I still come back and I wonder what are we going to do for rural America? You know, when everybody's riding on levitating magnetic trains, which I think are just so cool. When everybody in the cities are riding on those, how do I get 6 miles to the grocery store without pumping more CO2 into the air? You know, is anybody working on that stuff? Is anybody doing the science of transportation in rural America? And I got to admit, I'm a little bit of a snob. I hate diesel-powered buses because you just get off of one and it just sticks and clings to you. I had a diesel-powered automobile one time. Now, I'm not talking about biodiesel, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, petrol diesel, you know how that stuff just smell just clings to you?
Yep.
Got rid of that car in a hurry. Wish I hadn't. Mm-hmm. It could be like our friend Mike from Woodstock, New York. It could be his... I could have a grease car now, but you know, I was stupid back then. It was a long time ago. But what are we going to do to get folks around in rural America? How are we going to bring information to rural America? You know, we can green a whole bunch of America, a whole bunch of American cities by greening rural America. Because then, you know, you're a chemist, you're a scientist, you know the way these things pile up and add up and exponentialize and roll downhill.
Yep.
You know, how can we green America without greening Appalachia, Pat? How can we do that? How can we green, you know, Reverbo and I kidding and carrying on about, you know, maybe the South can just re-secede and we can separate for irreconcilable differences or whatever. You know, it's all kidding and all fun. But seriously, How do we green forward-looking America without greening backward-looking America at the same time?
You can't.
And so, you know, when Bobby Jindal, Piyush or whatever, is sitting there saying, well, you know, we don't want the money, how do you make it happen? I mean, is it just okay that Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, the Louisiana, Arkansas will stay in the West Virginia, stay in the 19th century while the rest of America moves ahead? Is that just okay? It's not with me. And, you know, things like the Coal River Wind Project. Go ahead.
It falls to the rest of us to let the people know in that state what exactly their leaders are doing. That's what's happening. You know. Maybe I'm sounding like Renee Louise all of a sudden, but
no, it's just not a bad thing.
No, it's not. You know, and you know, I was thinking when I heard Renee speak last night's show, it made me think a little bit. Maybe you can, if you don't feel comfortable talking about this on air, you can tell me in an email or something. But what happened with Phil? Phil just disappeared. Phil from Florida.
Yeah.
Phil got real mad at us.
He did?
Yeah.
I had a feeling that that's what happened, but...
Well, he got, and I mean, I'm not telling, I love Phil to death. I still think the world of him. But he got real mad at me and Guy James because we wouldn't get on board with, that crazy-ass right-winger, Ron Paul.
Oh, all right, well...
Because I have very clearly, and I'm not trying to pick on somebody who isn't, you know, Phil's listening, he can defend himself. I reverence and honor his work, but I have a difference of opinion that says that, I'm not very good at that the enemy of my enemy is my friend thing.
Yeah, not when that said enemy is the.
And, you know, when you're dealing with Ron Paul and you're looking at the war, and you're dealing with Ron Paul and thinking that Ron Paul is a helpful viper. Well, even if he's a helpful viper, at the end of the day, you take away the adjective and you still got viper.
Right, and you still got to round him up. He's done what he's supposed to do. You know, I mean, you let that monster loose, and who's going to put it back in the box? You don't want libertarianism rolling.
No. That
rolling in this country as it is.
Right, and again, let's be honest, Pat. Libertarianism is nothing more than right wing conservative republicanism that also wants to smoke dope.
Yep.
I mean, it just is. It just is.
Yeah. No. And I had my best friend growing up, and I still keep in contact with him. He's turned that way. He's turned like to the Ron Paul thing. And. And every time I talked to him before the election, he would start off with, "Oh, let me tell you about Ron Paul," and I would just immediately shut off, and I would just say, "Jay, you know, stop."
Yep. Yeah. This is a non-starter.
Yeah, you're my friend. I love you, but you're not going to convince me. So I don't want to talk about this. And you know, and I said, "Have you?" And I said, "Jay, I'll listen to you." If you go and you listen to the horn for a week, listen a whole week, and he wouldn't do it. So, yeah.
Well, and we're back to that. There's none so blind as those who will not see.
Right. Yeah. But, yeah, no, these, yeah. All right, so that's what happened with Phil, and I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry, and Phil, if you're listening, call.
Yeah, we still love you, brother. It's just, yeah. And, you know, there's stuff out there, Pat, to be excited about. I never wanted into Iraq. You know, we talk about, and this is just one of those little irony moments. We talk about the things that have been so bad for, the American car manufacturers, GM, Chrysler, right. You know, Ford's out there with their trucks and their slogans, "Built Ford Tough."
Mm-hmm.
And there was GM cruising along with that old Bob Seger song, "Like a Rock." And in 2003, George Bush starts a terrible, terrible, stupid, miscalculated, ignorantly advised war that winds up being a total disaster and a quagmire. And here's General Motors cruising along with a slogan that now sounds like their trucks are like Iraq. They ain't buying one either.
Yep.
You know, thanks, George. You know, they got to love that in Detroit. I never wanted in there. I wanted out the minute we got in. I wanted to stop the minute it started. But at least we are getting inklings that we're done with Iraq. We're done with it. We're going to get to close the book on it, we hope, and maybe start the rebuilding process and doing the long mea culpa that is required after these stupid adventures in American miscalculated imperialism. You know, I guess... You know, if Vietnam is any indication, then, you know, 30 years from now, Iraq will be a socialist state that we are happily using to outsource American jobs so children can be chained to tables, gluing soles on tennis shoes. And we will declare victory.
And Michael Powell will be over there dancing in a hula skirt.
There you go. Sure. And the next generation of Bushes will be standing there saying, "Well, I would have gone to Iraq, but,
You know, the politicians tied our hands. We could have won in Iraq if it hadn't been for the politicians. I mean, we've done this drill.
Yeah, it really does. It seems like we're playing the same stupid tape over and over and over again.
Lather, rinse, repeat.
Yeah. Did you catch the truckers on Austin City Limits?
I didn't. I didn't get a chance to.
I have an AVI file of it.
Cool.
My brother TiVo'd it for me and sent me the AVI file. So if at some point you want to...
Oh, I do.
Let me know.
They played here in West Virginia last Sunday, and I didn't get to go, and it just crushed me.
Man, you know, every time I see, like, live footage of them, it makes it that much clearer that I have to go the next time they come through Massachusetts. I have to go.
Yeah, it's a gotta... And I tell you what, if he comes anywhere near you, another one, because I just listened to the album, and oh my God, is it good. New album out, Jason Isbell,
yep.
And the 400 unit.
Yep. Yeah, I saw the album was out. I haven't.
You gotta. You gotta. It's intensely yummy. He's touring right now, so he might get up your way at some point. It just so happens he's going to be in D.C. the Sunday night that we're going to be there. Oh, dear.
Oh, man.
Oh, dear.
Did you see Patterson had walking pneumonia?
No.
He had to cancel out of their, I guess they played two shows last weekend in D.C., and Patterson had to bow out. The rest of the band played, but Patterson walked out of those two shows, and I guess they canceled the rest of the tour. He's got walking pneumonia.
Oh, wow. I didn't know. Maybe they didn't make the gig in Charleston. God, I hope he's okay. That's brutal business.
Yeah, it seemed like he was. I have him on my
Facebook. Well, I would love to see that AVI file, and I'm going to sneak a couple of Jason's tracks on because wow, what lyrics! Just the gorgeous lyrics, and the musicians backing him up are tight as a drum. Oh, they're good. Cool. And it's just, it's just Jason Isbell in the 400 unit. And, you know, he was with the truckers for a while, so.
Yeah. I have his first album, I think. Or the one with Dress Blue on it.
Sirens of the Ditch.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So. Well, Pat, it's awful good hearing from you. I hope you get to feeling better, and I hope Annie and the boys get to come home, because I know you miss them terribly.
Yeah, they'll be home tomorrow, so.
Well, please tell them I always said hello, okay?
I will. And you guys have fun in D.C. and, you know, be a tourist, but, you know, don't.
But, yeah, we're there to get some very vital information, too. And
don't be taken advantage like a tourist, that's all.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm talking from the standpoint of standing around with your mouth hanging open and just, dang, you know, looking at stuff. Right.
Yep. Yeah. All right, bye.
All right, Pat, take care. Good to hear from you, brother. Don't be such a stranger.
I'll try.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
And rolling onward, got a bunch of blinking lights. If you guys stay there and we have to roll over and do a little bit of extra innings, we will so do. Hey, welcome to the program.
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to you.
Bob Kincaid, my favorite redneck from West by God, Virginia. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Is this John?
John Wathan.
Yeah. Yeah, John Wathan. How are you, my friend?
Well, I'm here in the Big Apple looking out at all these lights and all this damn coal being burned up with nobody in the freaking offices, and you know what that does to me? Sets my house on fire.
It does the same thing to me. It goes through me like a dose of salt, John.
Hell, I just don't understand why we need all these lights on and there's nobody in the offices. I mean, I'm sitting here on the 12th floor looking all the way through buildings and nobody there in the lights on. In the meantime, it took 70 acres of West Virginia mountaintop to power that damn building. Now, there's some insanity going on.
Son of a gun.
Yeah, I'm full of it tonight, man.
Well, that's cool, though, because somebody got to get the piss and vinegar going. And you've been at it hard since last we talked. Update us a little bit, would you, John?
Man, I don't ever let up on coal. I can't. You know how that goes. You know, I sent you some photographs a while back.
Yes, you did.
Took out of the TBA ash pond up there, the ash hole in Kingston, we found some heavy equipment embedded in that ash that had to have been working or at least parked on the dam when the dam fell.
Yeah, I saw those. Those were the darndest photos I've seen in a while. I mean, just caterpillar yellow sticking up through the muck.
Yeah, exactly. And I've gone in there, and of course, in Photoshop, I can blow it up and look really close. And what that thing is a motor grader that they use on highways and such. It's got a big bucket on the back that scrapes dirt and takes it to another location and dumps it out. The tractor is separate from it. It's a two-piece machine. And the only thing I can think of is they were moving ash either out onto the dam or they were taking ash out of the pond. There were no reports from anybody in the community of machinery working at 12:30 when that thing blew out, but it had to have been parked there. If it wasn't working, it was parked there. And it's full of material. When you look at the photographs closely, you can see that it's full of material.
So the inference that one draws from that, John, they knew.
Exactly. Now, and another thing, in some of my photographs, you look close. You got South Wings. If anybody don't know South Wings and they're in this movement, you need to know them. South Wings got me in the air. And I got the first high-resolution photographs that came out from up there. And it was really kind of, it was overwhelming. It took me a long time in editing to figure out exactly what I was looking at. And I can pinpoint now where the breach happened. And this machine is sitting right in the middle of the breach. Now, if it wasn't working, it had to have been parked right there where this thing breached. Normally, that wouldn't sound like such a bad thing, but this dam had been leaking to a point where they had actually dug a pond. They put a pond below the dam to catch the water that was weeping through the dam and then pump it back across the ash pit into a pond adjacent to it. And you can see that pipeline in my photograph. If they knew that thing was in such bad condition that they were having to pump water away from it to keep it from failing, what are they doing parking heavy equipment on it? None of this makes sense to me.
No, it's reckless conduct, John. I mean, legally reckless conduct.
Clearly said, well, I won't say clearly. You have to really hunt for it because it looks like a blur. But once you realize what it is, you see it in several photographs. PDA helicopters hovering over this piece of machinery. There's no way they can deny knowledge that it is there.
It's being pointed out in the chat room by Nanette. She said it's just like Buffalo Creek. They knew it was going to blow.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Nanette. Yes. They not only knew it was going to blow, but I think they knew to within a few weeks of when it would happen, because there's a gentleman who, and I told you this when I first talked to you, sitting on the side of the road up there that night. There was a gentleman I met who refused to be identified, who told me that TVA made him stop fishing around the side of that dam with no reasoning whatsoever, just said, after 40 years, you can't fish here anymore. That was right where the breach happened, and that same man now, I've got him on channel one of the, I think it's NBC or one of the big networks, interviewed him. He owns some cattle right above where the breach happened, and I believe that man could be located, and he'd tell you the same story now, that something was wrong or they wouldn't have run him out of there after 40 years.
Yeah, because it seems a little precipitous just at, well, you know, 40 years, you know, year after year. And then suddenly, nah, you got to go. You don't just do that. That doesn't just happen.
No. Well, have you had a chance to go up and look at my map site that I put up on this?
I have seen it once. I have not given it the study that it deserved, frankly, John, but I have seen it.
Okay. when you get a chance, I'll get you the web address to it. I've updated that thing quite a bit now, and I've got photographs in there that show the mix line or the plume of ash that's moving through the river.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually got it documented 25 miles downstream at the Watts Bar, the dam there at Watts Bar. We've got ash on the lower end of the dam 25 miles away. The where the ash is being dredged in the most recent photographs that I took, you can see the plume of mud, and this is where the heavy metals, the arsenic, and all this stuff is going to be located in this mud. Right where our samples showed 300 times the allowable limit for arsenic, they're dredging. They're pulling logs out, and it's creating a plume that you can see being drawn through the power plant. All the water there goes through the power plant, and as long as that plant is running, it's pulling the water straight off the ash pile and discharging it through the power plant.
So they're just compounding their problem then?
Well, in legal terms, that's an intentional bypass of the permit.
Yes, it is. And that power plant has never slowed down. The power plant hadn't slowed down for a minute, has it, John?
No, they're not going to. If there were a water keeper program there, we would sue immediately. But, you know, you got to have standing.
Yeah.
Someone in that area needs to be paying attention to that because it's a daily violation if they create a mix line. If the water coming out of that plant is darker than the water in the Clinch River by 50 NTUs, and it's a legal term, nephelometric units, but anyway, if that water creates a mix line there that is darker than the river, it is a violation. And if they're pulling this stuff off the ash pile and pushing it through there, it has to be discharging all the metals that are in that sludge.
Right back out.
Right. Because they're pulling the water off the ash pile.
Well, I was going to ask you, what are they doing? You mentioned dredging and so forth, John. What are they doing with what they're dredging? I mean, where did the ashbergs go?
Well, the ashbergs are still where they were, but in the most recent photographs, after rain, you'll see them. They're starting to seek level. They're starting to pancake out, flatten out. So it's filling, it's seeking level under the water. It's filling in what they call the embayment of the Emory River. I like that term they created, the embayment. Not an impoundment. We didn't stop it up. We just made a bay out of it.
Yeah, it's just a bay. It's a nice place to go sailboat.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Just taking the language out and torturing it. Yeah.
It's completely full. And from the air, you can look down and see that it's just within a few feet of the surface. This is bad business. Every time it rains, those ashbergs are dissolving. It's sort of like taking a piece of sand and dropping it into a glass of water. It stays in a clump for a little while, and then it flattens out on the bottom of the glass. This stuff is doing that exact same. And it's seeking level in the Emory River, and we've got billions of yards of it. So as they dredge it, they're stirring up the cloud of mud.
Well, sure, it's like any country boy knows. The more you stir it, the more it stinks.
10-4. It's bad. The mix line at the Tennessee River. You got the Emory River flows into the Clinch, then the Clinch into the Tennessee.
Right.
The mix line at the Tennessee River after the first rain was so stark, so clear and evident that you could see it from like 2 or 3 miles out in the airplane. You could see it. And that's the one that we followed 25 miles. We that mud plume 25 miles down the Tennessee River. And it's, you know, that fine clay, that's where the toxins, that's where the heavy metals are in this stuff.
It's not dirt. You got to remember, this is not dirt. It's coal waste. It's coal combustion waste.
It's poison.
Exactly. That website is www.imrivers.com/TVA ash. And that's a map site that I've got up there that shows this 25 miles of migration of this stuff, the Tennessee River. And I've also got Widow's Creek on there. And I hadn't talked to you since Widow Creek.
That's true.
Widow Creek wasn't quite as bad, but in a lot of ways, the scenario was worse. Because in this one, the pipe, calls it a leaky pipe.
Yeah, I saw that.
The leaky pipe they're talking about is an overflow pipe to the pond. They put these big pipes in the pond to where when the water reaches a certain level, it flows over the top and only water goes out through the pipe into the retention pond. This one became stopped up with ash, not logs and limbs and but just ash. This stuff sets up like cement.
Yeah.
We went through several years of drought conditions where it became, you know, more and more solid. It became hardened. And instead of boring it out, cleaning it out, raising the elevation of it to make the pond deeper, they just went to another area and put in a new overflow pipe and let that one fill up. The ash covered it over. Everybody forgot about it. Nobody thought about this thing again. Well, the drought ended. We started getting rain, and the material that was in the pipe started becoming solvent, saturated again. So it got soft, and when it blew out, a 36-inch hole opened up in the bottom of that pond and was like a siphon. It was sucking the water out of the pond. It drained over 100 acres of that gypsum pond into Widow Creek, and they said they only lost 10,000 gallons. We're talking millions again. And the bottom hadn't been sampled there. The folks at United Mountain Defense really had it on the ball in Tennessee. They went in, they got their samples fast, they did everything. You know, it took a little help from everybody to get that done. But unfortunately, in Widow Creek when it happened, I'm from Alabama and I gotta hang my head in shame and just say we were not ready. We were not prepared. And the samples didn't get taken. TVA shut us out. Now, they couldn't stop me in the airplane. Once again, South Wing saved our bacon because the only high-resolution photographs that came out of that site were mine, and South Wing's had me in the air 3 hours after the report hit. It was amazing. I was flying Kingston, taking photographs of it, and when we landed, my cell phone went off, and it was somebody calling and saying Widow Creek had broke. And they had me another pilot, another plane by the time I could drive to Kingston, from Kingston to Widow Creek. South Wings had a plane and another pilot ready to go.
They do monumental work, John. They really do. They do.
Absolutely amazing people. But we got up, and when I got up there, I couldn't find where there was a breach. I looked for a dam break. I couldn't find it. But then there was this hole in the middle of the pond that kept jumping back at me. Why is that thing like that? And when we tipped the wing and I could look straight off the end of the wing, I must have taken about 50 pictures at once because it hit me all at once. That's a corrugated pipe. It has no business being there. And it sucked this pond dry.
Dang.
They knew about that one because they allowed that to happen.
Well, that was, again, that's an intentional act, John.
I think it is. To me, that is an intentionally negligent act. And, you know, when Kingston came out, I came out was the first to get on camera saying this is a crime of negligence. Someone should go to jail for what happened at both of those plants. And in the same week, the Ocoee River, also inundated with ash by TVA. Three rivers in 2 weeks. It's insanity.
And we're still waiting, John. We're still waiting for the what's good. Still waiting for somebody to wake up to it, for the nation to wake up to it. Because you know this thing happened back around Christmas. And I
will say this: we've had more attention since that happened to coal combustion waste than at any time in my entire career. So this is a great door opener. No one lost their life. Unlike Buffalo Creek, no one lost their life, and that is such a blessing. It could have been a completely different scenario had this happened in the summertime, and all of those people at Swan Pond who are snowbirds and summer visitors, had they been there in their cottages and this happened, we would have seen multiple deaths. So, you know, he's looking out for us. He's giving advocates tools to work with. And if we don't seize the opportunity as advocates across this country to push the envelope and tell these sons of bitches we will, excuse me.
That's all right.
If we don't send a loud, hard message to the people in control of this country, that we want a different energy package. We want responsible energy. We want renewable energy. We want our communities left intact. We want our mountains left intact. And by God, we want to eat the fish in our rivers. We've got to do that as a collective. No politician can make that happen. I don't care how powerful they may seem. No politician is going to make that happen. No scientist is going to make that happen. No one environmentalist is going to make that happen. It's going to take every one of us as a collective, and that opportunity is knocking on our door right now.
Yes, it is. And the stakes are becoming much more plain as well, John. All the hard and dedicated work that you do, creek keepers, river keepers, water keepers, needs to be magnified and intensified. And that's like me telling you, we need more people doing what you're doing. It needs to be happening on a much more massive scale here in West Virginia. You and I have had brief conversations about the New and the Gauley rivers. These things are literally under attack. There's a string of mountain removal jobs that starts here in my hometown and eventually will extend all the way up into the next county, and every last one of it runs along and drains into the Gauley River. And then there's an old coal-fired power plant that supplies my electricity, sadly. Technically I buy wind power, but you know how that is. That sits hard by the Kanawha River on downstream from all of that. We're begging for another disaster if we don't do what you're doing.
Well, you know, it's not just the mining aspect of it, Bob. There is so much involved with this myth of cleansing coal. You know, coal to liquid, supposed to be our big salvation. We can make diesel fuel out of coal. Well, okay, now we're going to double the extraction, and we're going to go get the dirtiest possible stuff out there, lignite and brown coal. And that's what we're going to squeeze the diesel fuel out of.
And we're going to use clean water and turn it into filthy water to do it.
And where are we going to put the waste?
Because
lignite and brown coal create almost three times, I've forgotten the exact statistics, but it's nearly three times the amount of waste as bituminous coal.
Yes.
So where are we going to put all of that waste? What kind of another lie are we going to create? Are we going to use it?
Well, just dam up another holler. The hillbillies won't mind, John.
Well, see, there ain't no hollers where this stuff's coming from in Mississippi.
That's
My
true.
God, they're mining coal in Mississippi.
Now, that beats
yeah.
all. That beats
and it
all.
Ain't coal to me. It's nothing but burnable dirt.
Yeah.
It's all a lie. It's a big lie. And we at Waterkeeper Alliance, is the first organization. I've been dealing with this stuff for going on 2 decades now. And for the first time, Bob, I have a platform that deals with coal cradle to grave. Every facet, every aspect of coal will be brought to light. The lies will be exposed, and the truth will be told. And you can find that at www.thedirtylie.com. The reason I'm in New York City tonight, I'm going to attend a party tomorrow night, our launching party for the DirtyLie.com. Bobby Kennedy's coming into town.
Oh, mercy.
Gloria Rubin will be here, Kevin Bacon. We're going to have a party at the Green Room downtown. It's supposed to be the most environmentally friendly nightclub in at least New York. And we're going to announce thebiglie.com in a big way.
Oh, dadgummit, John, I wish I'm going to be on the road tomorrow night, but what I wouldn't do to hear from you there and get a few people on the horn to talk about the truth behind the dirty lie.
Here's how you can help me, Bob, and you can help America by doing this.
All right.
I'm going to video everything that I can tomorrow night, of course. But part of my trip, I'm going to turn this into a working trip and come back down through Appalachia. I'm going to go Saturday and Sunday over into Pennsylvania and interview some folks over in Longwall Country.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will be in D.C. for the gathering, the Greenpeace gathering at the power plant there.
We'll be there, too.
See my West by God, Virginia. I'll be wearing something with a Waterkeeper fish on it. That's a promise.
All right.
But then after that, I want to come back down through Appalachia and meet and greet with a few folks, interview them on camera, and we're going to produce YouTube link segment videos to be released periodically on the DirtyLie.com. Then I'll go out to the Four Corners area, and I'll interview some of the Hopi, the Navajo, the Zuni Pueblo.
Yeah, folks dealing with Black Mesa.
The stories that are not being told, Bob, are the ones I want to talk to. I love Larry Gibson, and everybody knows his story. I want to talk to the little lady who's sitting at her kitchen table and hadn't had her story told yet.
Well, I tell you what, on your way back down through, if we don't hook up in D.C., which I sincerely hope we do, John, you got the number here.
Yeah, call me and we'll make arrangements. I'll find you if I have to.
All right, sounds good, and I'll give you my number as well. But I can introduce you to some people around here that would love to have their story told.
Well, you know it. It's not like it. I'm no reporter. I'm not a New York Times journalist of any kind. I would just want to ask them a couple of questions and sit down and let them talk.
Yep, that's what it has to be, because these are raw stories from a rather raw existence, John. These are ignored people. You know, I mean, we just are. We're in the way of the corporate worship of holy profit.
We're the nation's energy sacrifice zone, and that sucks.
Yeah, it does. It does, and that's why I found. I don't know if you've seen it. The Van Jones remarks from the Good Jobs Green Jobs conference when he talked about turning sacrifice zones into sacred zones. Pretty inspiring stuff, and I hope the heck it can happen. He'll be speaking at Power Shift again, and I hope maybe this time I get to get him behind a microphone. You never know. But we have to start thinking that way.
And the thing that I keep preaching over and over again, you cannot green the rest of America until you green Appalachia, because if you green the rest of America without greening Appalachia, every green thing you do is going to have coal's tarry, filthy, dirty black stain all over it.
And I'm sick of it.
Yeah.
Sick of hearing the horror stories. And, you know, we talked a little bit about this last time. I've been doing this a long time. And I'm still fighting the same fights that I fought 20 years ago.
And every time you think you've made a little progress, along comes 8 years of some political nightmare, and everything gets thrown into reverse, and you wind up further back than when you started working the first time. I know. It eats you alive.
Well, I hope and pray that things are going to turn around a little bit with this administration. Now, don't get me wrong. Now, I am not an Obama drumbeater.
Me neither.
I voted for him, I'll tell you that.
Me too.
But I still got my doubts. He's real close to the coal people for me.
Well, you know, I was off air by the time he was speaking last night, but I can guarantee you there were some there were some words used when he said those two words, you know, the clean and the other one. When he said that last night, there were some words used I'd be ashamed for my mama to know I knew how to use. But it goes through me, John. Ever since we talked, I kind of paid attention, and I just can't stand to hear the phrase anymore. Drives me batty. It honestly does. I have you to thank for that. But I don't know if you heard Nanette earlier when she was talking, and the head of the West Virginia Coal Association, John, was interviewed about that two-word obscenity. And he said, when you flip on your lights and you see the light on your ceiling, that's clean coal.
Yeah.
That's what we're up against. That's what we're fighting.
Well, that's why I'm hoping the dirtylie.com, go up and look around in there. We've got videos posted, and we're going to be putting new stuff up. It's going to be a work in progress. You know, as long as we need it up there, we're going to keep it up there and refresh it with new stuff. But that, I think, Bob, that is how we're going to turn things around.
Well, I just loaded it here, and what
educate the people who are blindly flipping the switch and voting. People in New York City. People in La Jolla, California, who have never seen a coal mine and wouldn't know a coal stack if they drove by. They're the ones that have to know. And that's why we chose Manhattan to kick this party off. We're right here on Wall Street's front door. We're right here where the money brokers come and go, and we're going to open the front door to the dirtylie.com and say, by God, deal with it. You Wall Street profit jockeys cannot destroy us anymore. We are not ignorant anymore. We can do this, but like I said, it's going to take everybody. You got to participate.
That you do. And I just had a look at the website while we were talking. That's a brilliant piece of design work. That is tremendous.
Oh, and it's only going to get better. Because once I begin bringing in these raw video of the people you're going to introduce me to, my good brother Bill McCabe down in Virginia, I want to talk to some of his folks. I'm going over into Pennsylvania to interview Miriam Plovic. I don't know if you know Miriam, but she is an absolute hero in the long wall side of this thing. She stayed in her house through subsidence. They went under her, like she could actually hear the machinery under her house. Her house began to subside on Christmas Day. This woman has, I've forgotten the exact numbers, but it's like 27 children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. And she could not have them in her home on Christmas because the house was subsiding. They cabled her house off. They blocked all of her doors, nailed them shut, nailed her windows shut to keep it from breaking apart when it sank. They told Miriam she would have to leave. She would have to go to a motel while the house subsided. And she, hell no, I won't. She and her husband built that house and knew a little bit about destruction. And before subsidence began, they pulled strings through the house that were level. They hung plumb bobs from the door jams and made marks on the floor. They set levels in strategic places in the house. And they stayed. And they videotaped their house subsiding. And in parts of the video, you can see a plumb bob hanging from the door, and it's not moving at all. And all of a sudden in the video, with no wind or nothing, the plumb bob begins to move. And set a golf ball down on the floor and not thump it, just set it down and watch it roll across the floor. That's kind of hard to imagine these things, but now you're out there, you've baked cakes before, a 14-inch Pyrex baking pan.
Sure.
She baked a cake on Christmas Day that was 3/4 inch thick on one side, 1 3/4 inch on the other side. Her house was tilted that much. Her stove, no. The entire house had tilted that much on Christmas Day. Those are the stories that have got to be told, Bob. People in La Jolla, California need to know. People in New York City need to know about Miriam. They need to know about what happens when they flip these switches and go off and leave them. Like I'm standing here looking out this window from the 12th floor, looking across New York City at thousands and thousands of acres of our mountains going up in smoke. Going up in smoke.
For empty buildings.
There's nobody in them. I see a few people on a couple of floors, but I mean, there's whole office, there's a whole dental facility right next to me that every light in the building's on. I can see every chair. Every chair is covered with plastic. Nobody's in the building. All the computers are turned off, and I can see this because all of the freaking lights are on.
This part of it is not rocket science, John. Turn the damn lights off.
Oh, holy cow.
I know. But what you're talking about is so vital because the query that I asked Nanette earlier in the evening, if you knew that you were doing something that was doing grave harm to another fellow human being, another American fellow human being, would you keep doing it? And most anybody with any kind of a moral sense, John, says, well, hell no, I wouldn't. Well, then turn the lights off. You know, rednecks and Appalachians and hillbillies, we are actually as American as anybody else in this country. And it's not okay to sacrifice us, our kids, our kids' futures, the places where we live. It's not okay. And frankly, I've gotten to a point where I'm kind of red-assed about it, John.
Everybody should be red-assed about it. That's the deal right there, Bob. We've got to get everybody red-assed about black cocaine. This product that America cannot get enough of has to be equated to drugs. It's something that we know is bad for us. We know that it is killing our communities, our neighbors, our neighborhoods. And yet, for that instant gratification, it's worth it. It's like cocaine.
It very much is. And it will drive you to madness and death, just like cocaine.
Well, it's got to. We got to start somewhere. And you know, for years, I'll never fault anybody for standing up for their communities. We've had tremendous effort on mountaintop removal. We've had tremendous effort on longwall mining. We've got Jeff Stant up there. That has just been an absolute warrior for coal ash and coal combustion waste. But they're individualized fights. and they don't really overlap each other. People in Appalachia fighting for mountaintop removal really don't know what's happening to the people out west. They don't know a whole lot about longwall mining, except in, you know, a few certain areas.
Right. But we're closing those gaps. We're closing those gaps.
Waterkeeper Alliance is, you know, and we should do it. Waterkeeper Alliance should be the ones to do this, because every facet of coal affects water. Nothing you can do with coal does not affect water. You mine it, you're destroying aquifers. You're polluting the streams. You're burying the streams. Taking off the tops of the mountains, you're changing the weather. Then when you burn it, it goes into the air, yes, but it's redeposited there on the ground and in the water, and the toxins are ingested through the water.
And thereby comes the heart and soul of the saying that I first heard from Maria Gano up here, we're all downstream.
That's right. So who better to take something like thedirtylie.com and run it out into the public than the Waterkeeper Alliance? I am so proud of this movement.
It's amazing. Since I've found out about it, and you know, frankly, the first I heard about it was when I heard Bobby Kennedy speak down in the Coal River Valley, John. And it was exciting just to hear the kind of activism that was building around the organization. And then to hear the fire and passion that you bring to it, I know the validity of the work that's being done, and I know the force and impact that it's having. And this next step with thedirtylie.com, like I said, this is a stunningly gorgeous website, sharp as a tack, and it will get seen and it will get noticed. This movement just to get the cities to turn the daggum lights. You know, I bark at my children when they walk out of their bedroom and leave the light on, and an entire city does it?
Yeah.
Who's...
You and I have talked a little bit about, and we will talk some more about the potential for a Waterkeeper program on the New or the Gauley. But if you associate yourself with Waterkeepers, you'll find that the passion that I bring to this movement is not singular.
Nope.
Most of my brother and sister Waterkeepers are just as passionate, if not more so, than I am. And that's why I think that we're the right ones to bring this out. Not saying that the others are, you know, that other groups are not having a significant impact. Everybody needs to focus on their individual things and take care of mountaintop removal, because that's your backyard.
Yeah, that's our home.
But at the same time, we got to look at the whole package.
We've got to look outside.
Right.
We've got to look outside the
doing to us cradle to grave.
Precisely. And you know, I've been beating on this little quote that was sent along to us by our buddy Reverbo a while back, and I got to send it along to you in a Facebook message or something, John. A little excerpt from a Kurt Vonnegut book from 1973. It'll blow you away. And the other thing, I appreciate you putting up the Country Roads parody video that we had. I saw you did that over at Facebook. That was awful cool. And I just checked. That thing's up over 3,000 views now. It jumped 500 between yesterday and today.
Yeah. Well, you remember where that came from. I think this one may have been reworked a little bit. But Ken Heckler actually sang that on the floor of the Congress. He got up before Congress and used his time and sang either those words or very similar, but he got up and sang that in the Congress.
Well, I didn't know he had. I just I heard the phrase almost level and ran off and wrote the lyrics. And
okay, then I thought those lyrics sounded a little different.
Yeah, that's just something I threw together about 4 years ago.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, now there was another version of it that he actually sang on the floor of the Congress.
I'll be darned. I wonder if there's a recording of that. I'd love to find it.
been all over YouTube and you know, tried to Google it up, and I can't find it. But I do know there was some VHS tape of it, and maybe Obed has a copy.
Well, I'll look around and see if I can find it, because I'd love to honor Ken for his earlier work, because no one has worked harder than him. And you know what you know, he defines the word hero around here. You know, up in his 90s and you know, still standing up and, you know, getting attacked by the coal mob, and it doesn't care.
Whoa, Heckler's in his 90s?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm mistaking him for somebody else. There was another congressman from West Virginia who sang that song in the House, in the Congress. It wasn't Heckler.
Okay.
The guy that sang it was younger. He was younger than that. And this was, I want to say, 89.
Hmm.
But his went on, it was almost level West Virginia. No. Strip my mountains, pushed them in the valleys. And it went on. But yours, I knew when I heard it, those lyrics were different. That was good. I like that. Life is cheaper by the ton.
Yeah, and we lose more by law here than if they used a gun. You know, we had that all just came to the forefront two Fridays ago when that Fourth Circuit decision came down, John. And now we're finding out that the mine companies are absolutely knocking down the DEP's doors, trying to get permits to do more. That since there's been somewhat of a moratorium on it while the court case was pending, but now it's Katie bar the door.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, please say hello to everybody that needs a hello said to them from the horn tomorrow night. Best of luck, John, with the launch of the website. And it sounds like you've got people there that are going to start spreading the word and get people to turn the daggum lights out and understand that stuff can't be. Yeah, clean cocaine. There you go.
Black cocaine.
Yep. Exactly.
Well, there is hope. And, you know, another thing that I'm here to kind of celebrate, and I do want to pass this on. The Alabama Supreme Court ruled in our favor last Friday against Tuscaloosa Resources Incorporated, a coal mine in my watershed. The case was more against the state than against the CONC because of improper permitting like what y'all are dealing with here in West Virginia. The stream was on the 303D list, the EPA's list of impaired streams,
mm-hmm.
And I argued that because of that, it precluded any further permitting of those pollutants. And the state disagreed with me. They issued the permits anyway. I now have a whole buttload of permits in my watershed that were opened that way. The Supreme Court just ruled in our favor. They overthrew the permit. Now I have legal precedent to go back and reopen every coal mine permit in my watershed. We are the only environmental organization in Alabama's history to ever reverse a coal mine permit every appeal. We had 14 judges ruled in our favor. Not one judge ruled against us.
Dadgum. That is... And for people who don't know the Alabama judicial system, they don't really know how huge that is.
There is hope, my brother. If I can do that with limited finances in a state like Alabama, under the Alabama Department of Environmental Maniacs, it can be done in other places. You just got to be persistent. You've got to have that bulldog attitude.
Never give up.
That's it. You cannot. If you ever let them have a little bit of headway, they'll walk all over you. And together, everybody will develop just a little bit more tenacity. If we'll all go after this, we can expose the big lie, and we can turn this thing around in the next decade.
Well, I got a feeling that website will be getting a lot of play, John. And I
sure hope so. We sure put a lot into it if it don't.
Oh, my God. And that's obvious how much got put into it. Now, I guess the last thing we need to have stop happening
I guess you noticed that your attorney general has decided that he's got a dog in the hunt up in Washington in this corrupt coal court case that's before the Supreme Court, haven't you?
Yeah, but let me ask you something. How did he get to be my attorney general?
Well, yeah, you didn't vote for him. I know. I was just needling a little bit.
Yeah.
But I guess
some uphill battles. And it's not going to change overnight, but it's never going to change if we don't all work on it together.
There you go. Absolutely right. Well, enjoy your stay in New York City, John, and best of luck with the launch. And I'll be back in touch with you post-show, and we'll swap phone numbers and stuff so we can try to hook up in D.C.
All right. God bless you for what you do, Bob. You are the voice that we have to have.
Well, thank you, John. Bless your heart. And I tell you what, this is a level of activism that is exciting and energizing to hear about. So
we're going to rock some folks' world in the next decade. I guarantee it. Waterkeeper is going to be right there pushing the tide.
Absolutely. Absolutely. John, take care and be well, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Night, Bob.
See you, John. Thanks for the call.
Sure.
Bye. Hurricane Creek Keeper, John Wathen from Alabama, presently in New York City to do some activism, do some community organizing, do some attitude changing, and go look at thedirtylie.com. What a website. Holy cow. And if you haven't figured out, it's 15 minutes past 9 o'clock here on the East Coast, and we've gone to extra innings. And if a ball happens to land in the stands, it's yours to keep. I will not leave a phone blinking. Let's march through and see what's going on. Hey, welcome. Nope, doggone it. And let's see. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Koss, what's up?
Not much. That other line was me. The phone died while I was waiting.
Oh, sorry.
So I had a... stick the other one in the...
Yeah, but you at least know the drill. You know, we'll have the conversations. Just takes a little patience.
Well, that's no problem. Fun listening to people.
What's happening?
Not much. I have to admit, though, I was a little bit surprised last night. I mean, after 8 years of verbal incontinence, bumper stickers and sheer nonsense, it's amazing to listen to somebody who could actually string two sentences together and make sense.
Yeah, it is, and that hasn't worn off yet. It's still refreshing just to hear somebody that can use the language, and when you compare it with what we got after Cossack, for heaven's sakes,
oh,
you
know, God, oh God,
you know, it's like going from literally the President of the United States to Mr. Rogers. And that's not fair to Mr. Rogers, because he was well-intended, and Piyush Jindal is not well-intended.
No. No, he's not. It's just, this is the Republican Party. This is the Republican answer. More tax cuts for the rich. Excuse me, we've been doing this at least 8 years. If your theory was correct, why aren't we all rich? Why is the economy collapsing?
Right, and
do you understand?
Well, but they know they're lying. Like I said, this is showing up at the cocktail party you really don't want to go to. They know they're in the wilderness. They know they're irrelevant, but they have to keep at it because even though they're in the political wilderness, Cossack, they've got things that they still aim to accomplish and hope to accomplish. You know, the conversation I had with John there, just because there's a Democrat in the White House doesn't mean that the toxic polluters, the toxifiers of this country, the black cocaine pushers and or what have you, are going to give up. No, they're just going to start giving some of their money over to places they weren't giving it before and hope they can buy. Because, you know, they don't do democracy, Cossack. They do kleptocracy. They do oligarchy.
Yeah.
And they buy and sell governments on a whim.
I'm just at a loss. We plus the fact we have, what, 29% of the population that still supported that jackass to the bitter end and are still out there, the Joe the Plumber types.
Aye.
I mean, if you're making less than $250,000 a year and you're voting Republican, you are a chicken that is voting for Colonel Sanders.
Yes, you are.
And there are so many. I walk out of the door every day and get to listen to these idiots.
And it's a little frustrating. Yeah, because you're kind of in the heart of it.
And how? I mean, when I've talked to people and suggest things like cheat, we really could do with, you know, a 25 to 50% cut in the military budget. You would have thought that I had said that we should barbecue their grandmother.
That sounds about right.
You know. Oh, but we need all these weapons. What for? Who are you going to fight with them? You're going to hunt down the Mujahideen in Afghanistan with an F-35? Are you insane? Most expensive plane in the world that is useless for what we're doing? Where's the thought process here?
And you know, it's inspiring to know that we're maybe finally on the way out of Iraq. But we still got to answer that. We've got to answer that Afghanistan question, Cossack.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, I do not understand how people are so limited in their thought processes. If Alexander the Great could not conquer Afghanistan, if the British, in two tries, the British Empire couldn't conquer Afghanistan, if the Soviet Union, with what, three times the number of troops that we have in there, couldn't defeat Afghanistan, what the hell are we going to do?
I don't know, because I don't sit around thinking that I'm smarter than Alexander.
And
but there's somebody in the Pentagon who thinks that. No kidding.
Oh, no. And the Russians have been trying to tell these people, listen, you're not going to win. You can't do what we couldn't do. It's just not going to happen. And if it does, your country is going to collapse. It's going to suck out so many resources that your people can buy it. Do you understand? No, we can do it. You guys are just incompetent. Okay. You know, we'll see. We're not listening.
And
we listen to no one.
But, you know, look, 30 years from now, everybody gets to, Afghanistan gets to be Vietnam.
Exactly.
And we'll do like food travel shows that are there, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, you've read that interview that Brzezinski had with the French magazine back in 1998, where he actually admitted that, well, yeah, the Russians really were right. We actually were in Afghanistan 6 months before they came in. We just wanted to give them their Vietnam. And they, Brzezinski, was funding what? Those few crazy, quote, fundamentalist Muslims. Yeah,
freedom fighters. No, quit that. They were freedom fighters, Cossack. They were freedom fighters.
Yeah. Up until he crashed into the Twin Towers.
Well, we hate to talk about that.
Yeah. These are the people that we funded. You know, when you train a pit bull to attack, you can't complain when it chews up your kid.
There you go.
You know? Yeah. You know, and he even said in his interview, you know, what's more important to the world, you know, a few stirred up Muslims or the downfall of the Soviet Union?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you ask the survivors? Why don't you ask the families of those people that died? Ask them which was more important. And we still can't understand that there is such a thing as blowback. They're not...
Now, I don't think... No. Wait, Cossack. I don't think it's that we can't understand it. There's lots of people, obviously, we're talking about it, we get it. There are people who are willfully in denial of it.
Right.
Because if you allow for a concept like blowback, then you have to start dealing with sort of karmic or universal retributive justice. And nobody can ever admit that, you know, maybe we're earning some of this stuff gets earned.
I mean, they don't, quote, hate us for our freedoms. No. They hate us for our policies.
And they hate us for our negligence, and they hate us for our holier-than-thouness, and they hate us for a variety of reasons. Look, nobody wants to admit it. Well, no right-winger, no so-called conservative, no. They don't want to admit that the seeds that bore the fruit of September 11th, 2001, were sown in the Reagan administration.
Oh, yeah. Easily. I mean, well, unfortunately, there was sown during the Carter administration.
Yeah, some of them, too. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know. The problem of, well, and if we want to really follow the logic back to its beginnings.
You remember the fit that people threw when Jimmy Carter said we weren't going to the Moscow Olympics?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, you're politicizing the beauty of athletics. Now, Jimmy Carter, to his credit, at least saw the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan as arguably a human rights issue.
Yeah, but, again, was it an invasion?
True.
We say that we didn't invade Iraq. We were invited.
Right,
to stay there all these years. You know? Which is a crock. You knew that, and I know that. The Afghans certainly didn't invite us. And if you remember, back when, this was in 2002, before we attacked Afghanistan, the Taliban said, hey, you know, show us some evidence that bin Laden was behind this, and we'll turn him over to an international tribunal for trial. No, we'd actually rather invade, thank you. You know, this is how insane this is.
It is. It's insane.
They were willing to give the guy up without a shot being fired. And today we've killed far more civilians in Afghanistan, wedding parties, than we have Taliban or Mujahideen.
Although I found it interesting that reaction out of Pakistan was largely, I guess, officially favorable to the president's remarks last night. Did you catch that?
No.
That they thought it was a more reasonable and rational approach than what had been engaged in thus far. Of course, the only reasonable and rational approach to Afghanistan is get the hell out.
Yeah.
Everything else is literally founded upon irrationality and avoidance of reason.
Right. And I mean, you know, again, how intelligent is this? We're sitting there and we've admitted that we're launching these predators, the drones, from Pakistan, and we're firing missiles from Nellis Air Force Base. And just how discriminating do you really think that is? You can actually tell that there's a Taliban in that house and not a family?
Oh, I was listening to public radio the other day, Cossack, and I'm glad you mentioned this. And I heard an interview with an artist, and this is one of those gee, I love art moments. The man is an Iraqi, and his brother... And this was all about an art project that he had done. His brother was killed in a drone missile attack in Iraq. His brother was not a terrorist.
No.
His brother was a guy who got in the way of the American munitions industry.
And so the surviving brother, who is an artist, is in America, and he starts doing research on how that came to be, and he finds out that somebody with a joystick sitting in a room in Colorado killed his brother.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, is utterly remorseless about it. Because there's a, you know, there's that institutional psychological thing that allows people to avoid responsibility. Frankly, it's the same psychological phenomenon that allows people to leave lights on in skyscrapers in New York City without thinking of the 70 acres of West Virginia Appalachian Mountain that gets blown up to keep those lights on in buildings that don't have any people in them.
Exactly.
But to turn back toward my gist of what I was saying. So the guy turns around and creates an art project, and he constructs a clear dwelling space. And he lives in it for 30 days, and every angle in that clear living space is on camera. It was literally a living art project. Everything can be seen. And he put a paintball gun aimed into the room with yellow paintballs, and they could be operated by people accessing the art project on the internet. And people, lots and lots of Americans and people from other places in the world just had a fun time, just, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, shoot him anytime you want to, just shooting him remotely, just like they shot his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because eventually a peace movement developed in the project. And that was people who figured out that they could sit there and watch and wait for somebody to try to shoot and then try to control the gun themselves and make them miss. Fascinating study. Fascinating piece of artwork. But again, it's that question of stuff that we willfully do not wish to examine. And whether it is in the context of war or in the context of how we treat American communities, Cossack.
Yeah.
It's a matter of getting up in people's faces and forcing them to confront it. And then it's not, then you can't walk away so easily anymore.
No. It's like I've written about several times about, like, the Stanford Prison Project. Abu Ghraib had to happen just on the basis of what they found in the Stanford Project. You remember that one?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
You know, within just a couple of days, even though everybody knew that everybody else was a college student just like them, the guards were abusing the prisoners. The prisoners started to revolt. They had to shut the damn project down in something like 6 days. It was planned for a month. The problem of it is when you put people in positions of power, they will abuse it.
Yeah, as long as they have some sort of an out. Exactly.
Yeah. As long as somebody says, oh, it's okay.
Yeah, you're forgiven, you're absolved, you have governmental immunity, the government is behind you. As long as that's a function of, and we could do 3 hours on this, Cossack, that's a function of the authoritarian mindset that has been studied, and it comes out with some very, very creepy conclusions. Cossack, I've got to run along. I ran over and everything, but I enjoyed the call, and frankly, I gotta shut this all down and get packing, literally packing, because I got to get up early and get going tomorrow.
Yeah, that's true.
But take care, and I hope we'll hear from you again soon.
You will.
All right. Good to see you. Good to hear from you tonight, and always good to see you in the room, Cossack.
All righty. You take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy the Cossack, a regular in the Head On Radio Network chat room and also resident knower of lyrics, resident knower of lots of stuff, calling in from what you wouldn't exactly call the liberal bastion of North Florida. So that's it for the program this evening. Thanks everybody, and hope you didn't mind the extra innings with a conversation like what we had with John Wathan going there. I just knew we had to run over.
Just a reminder, probably no show tomorrow night. Maybe a show Friday. If God willing, the crick don't rise, that'd be very nice. And we'll try to be doing some stuff over the weekend, and I'll send out some emails so other people can send out some emails. And I hope that the media stuff works out there, and we get to bring you some of the conference itself, not me babbling about the conference, but make it real to people who couldn't make it to D.C. That's so very important as we go forward in these endeavors. Using our powers for good. There you go. So thanks for your calls, your emails. Thanks for your participation in the chat room. Don't forget to go by the headonradionetwork.com forum and post your thoughts there, post stories, engage in conversation during the time when programming isn't live on the horn. Thanks to everybody who helps keep things going here at the Horn via your kind contributions. We would not be able to do this without you. Thank you, and it is an honor to know what the Horn means to you, because the time you share with us means so very, very much. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Between listener contributions and the network sponsorship from Coal River Mountain Watch, it's what makes this all go. And, of course, the work, as you heard John Watham talking about, the work that gets done is world-changing, and it is a change for the better. And so much of what I've learned, so much of the inspiration has come through Coal River Mountain Watch, and truly they are my heroes. They are the hardest-working, bravest people I know. And they are all standing there upstream, not giving up one inch of ground, because they know that we are all, in fact, downstream. Thanks to John Fox, web designer, musician, host of All Foxed Up with John Fox, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I assume John will be live this Sunday evening. We will certainly find out. Just be there Sunday evening, 9 o'clock. Join us on the weekend schedule in general. Night Sounds with Billy Shears, Rick's Place with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, and The Rick Smith Show, all on the weekend schedule. Doing all this because I don't know if I'm going to be on the air Friday to remind you. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. All of what Peter does is so amazing, keeping all these computers in line and behaving. Another one of those vital little linchpins in how the Horn continues to exist. And then, of course, there is the hardest working, most overworked man in liberal talk, Ben Birch, who literally saved talk radio on the internet starting in 2002 with WhiteRoseSociety.org. Every bit, every packet that passes through the stream passes through the infrastructure that Ben Birch has built at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.